It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvos joins us. Jeff Jarvos. I'm going to call him that. From Davos. He's at the World Economic Forum with some really big names. He'll have a report. Kevin Marks is also here from the Indie Web, and Stacey Higginbotham from Stacey on IoT. We'll talk about the latest news from Google, artificial intelligence, and a visit to the Internet Archive. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and once again, time for Twit's audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It's only going to take a couple of minutes, really. That's all. Just go to twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. Your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. And thanks for your continued support. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 388, recorded Wednesday, January 18th, 2017. A Doctor in Industry. This Week in Google is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/twig and entering the promo code TWIG. And by Eero. Why settle for just a Wi-Fi router when you can have a brilliant, hyper-fast, super-simple Wi-Fi system? No more buffering, no more dead zones. Finally, Wi-Fi that works. For free overnight shipping, visit Eero.com and at checkout, select overnight shipping and enter the code TWIG. And by Audible. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audible.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest from the Googleverse, from the world about us. Jeff Jarvos is about in the world. He's in Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic
Forum. Here's my official badge.
That makes you a big shot.
It does. The white badge is the thing that gets you in everywhere, including God's living room, yes.
How many Davos for World Economic Forums is this for you?
11.
Yeah, it seems like as long as we've been doing the show, you've been there this time of year.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. And so I'm in the press center where there's 1, 2, 3, 4 diligent journalists working, and I'm disturbing them by talking.
No, you're diligent. This is diligent journalism. Welcome to...
I'm responsive and responsible.
Yeah. Also with us, Kevin Marks. He's in a typhoon in his backyard.
Hello there.
The wind is starting to pick up.
Yes, it is raining rather heavily here.
What is it about
you
inside?
You see things fly past my face.
What is it about inside you don't like?
Yeah, well, you've never done inside, have you?
There are 4 dogs in there that will join in.
Ah.
So,
well, that's why I come outside.
Yeah, Stacey Higginbotham is also here from Austin, Texas. Stacey on IoT, and she has a couple of dogs who bark.
No, just one, but I have a neighbor's
dog. Sounds like
dog.
Two. Okay.
You can hear it, yeah.
Wait a minute. Your neighbor's dog is, what do you have, play dates? Is he over right now?
No, I have like 5 feet from my neighbor. So their backyard is like closer to me than my actual dog is right now.
Nice.
And he's a Bernese Mountain Dog. So he's huge.
Oh, that's the biggest. That's huge, is right.
He's so sweet.
If he would carry a barrel of brandy around his neck, it'd be okay.
Yeah, you know, he might. I wouldn't put it past him.
Do they still do that in Davos?
Yeah. Have you seen any, Jeff?
No.
Of China spoke at Davos yesterday. That was a big deal.
He did indeed. He's taken over the world. He's now the unfree leader of the free world. That's kind of where we are now. It's amazing here that the Trump... heartburn is felt throughout. Joe Biden, I went to see Joe Biden speak today, and he gave basically a benediction to liberal democracy.
Oh, it's not that bad.
To the liberal world order of being open and world and free trade and globalism and all that, liberal in that definition.
Xi Jinping, who's the president, not premier, but president of China,
yes.
One of the things he said, no one will emerge as a winner in a trade war. And that's specifically aimed at President-elect Trump.
He quoted Dickens. It was an amazing speech.
His contention is that globalization is a good thing. It's powered growth worldwide. Obviously, it's a good thing for China. Is it a good thing for the world?
The view here, you know, I love how people just summarize the entire view of the
yes.
elite in Davos.
The elite
but the
say.
View here, the elites say that globalization is an unalloyed good thing that maybe what could have been done better. Could have been done to have more concern about people's jobs and lives. Now, what does that mean in practice? I have no idea.
I don't know how so you protect jobs in a country without tariffs, without all sorts of artificial restrictions, without a trade war, in effect.
And it doesn't calculate a couple things. It doesn't calculate the added value of world trade. I never see calculations of that, number one. And number two, it does not calculate, very importantly, the job impact of technology, which is the real story that nobody acknowledges here. However, and I'll talk about this in the number much later, but the Edelman PR company released its Edelman Trust Barometer for the 17th year. And for relevant to us at Twig and Twit is that there's an outright fear of innovation and thus technology now. There's a backlash coming to us, folks.
I almost would prefer the globalization backlash to the technology backlash. Right?
It's not gonna be pretty. I know.
The Luddites coming to smash the looms. One of the things President Xi said is no one would emerge as a winner in a global trade war. Pursuing protectionism is like locking oneself in a dark room. And this, you'll appreciate this, Kevin Marks. Wind and rain might be kept outside, but so are light and air.
And dogs. The dogs of war are at the door.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, the reason this is a tech subject is because almost all the products we use in technology are made outside the United States. And I think one of the, you know, agendas for President Xi is to keep that, whether it's jobs or jobs for robots, to keep the cash flowing into China from Americans and other countries from the manufacturer there.
And the word is he filled a vacuum, that there's a vacuum here. Obviously, this being inauguration week, nobody here except for Anthony Scaramucci is the only person from Trump's world here. Biden is here. But basically, the Americans are much less represented than ever. And it's symbolic of how Xi filled a vacuum. Merkel's not here. Trudeau's not here. May is not here. So Xi is the biggest leader here by far, and he's reveling in it. Sorry, Stacey.
No, that's okay. That's more perspective than I was going to offer.
Well, offer your perspective anyway. From the view from my porch in Austin, Texas is...
Oh, well, so I was actually going to talk about protectionism and tariffs. And what I think the nuance that gets lost is most of the time when we're talking about that, it's negotiated trade agreements. So there's going to be a tariff. I'm going to tax this and you can tax that. And the way we're talking about all of this is just silly.
Well, it is interesting because technology fans have been a little upset with TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and frankly, a lot of the treaties that go on, because very often American content companies' interests, the copyright holders' interests, are in some's opinion overrepresented in these treaties. That a lot of what these treaties are generated by WIPO, the World Intellectual Property Organization, out of the UN, which is basically driven by Hollywood. And so I think it's funny because the techno left has been against TPP for other reasons.
Well, other reasons, yeah. Copyright, overextension of copyright primarily, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Anyway.
Well, but also some of the nation states can sue government stuff that's off-putting.
Exactly.
I mean, governments, corporations can sue governments. Right. That's the piece that's a bit weird about it.
And by the way, you could do anything you want, but ultimately, this is not going to globalization as a trend is not going to go away. The automation of jobs is not going to go away. And I think what Xi is saying I'll paraphrase what Xi is saying is it's not merely trade wars that could put us in that dark room. It's turning our back on the future, somehow artificially holding back on the future. So what we really ought to do is plan for it, train for it, consider it, and instead of saying, oh, we're going to go back to the manufacturing might of the 1950s America, say, well, how do we deal with this inevitable freight train that's coming straight at us, right or no?
Shouldn't our leaders be the ones saying that? Instead,
please.
It's Bill Falls.
Our leaders we have seen so many train wrecks coming, and historically we have decided not to deal with them until it's either too late or it's just inevitable, and then we stick a Band-Aid on it. I mean, in some ways, that's why Trump is in office now, is because our government has become so...
Right. We let it get to this point. But you could force Apple. I mean, and I'm sure he'll attempt to force Apple. That'd probably be the tit for tat to repatriating Apple's $200+ billion that's held overseas would be. And by the way, let's get some manufacture back in the United States. But I don't know if those are going to be jobs that will make much a difference in the long run. Or maybe they will. I don't know.
When I talk to companies in tech that are trying to do manufacturing in the U.S., one of the challenges is we just don't have the cluster of needed manufacturing. So like if I'm going to make, let's say I'm going to make a tech toy, for example, I'm going to have the electronics assembled somewhere, some of the electronics. Then I have to ship them someplace else to get like the screens put in. Then I'm going to have the plastics done elsewhere, and I have to ship it to that place. Whereas in China, you can go like doom, 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 down the street and get all that done. And
that's not merely because you pay less.
Right.
Although that's part of it. But a lot of it is that it's just logistically easier to make it in China and then bring it all over here in boats and planes. Well, we'll see. I mean, it's interesting times ahead. What else have you seen at Davos that's of interest to the tech community?
Well, we mentioned this from Germany. I was in Germany beforehand at the DLD conference, and while I was there, the German government, the EU rather, released a report arguing that robots and thus AI algorithms should have personhood and the potential to own intellectual property and be legal entities that you can sue. How's that for interesting? So companies are people... robots are people. Algorithms are people.
Who pays if a robot gets sued?
Well, because if the robot, if the AI invents something new, the argument in this European report is that the software should own the rights to that and license it and then gets assets.
What?
Oh, that's silly, because a robot in that case would be an employee of whatever company it works for. And that the same rule, I mean, people have those same rules already when you go to work for a tech company or anything.
Stacey, can you be a tough negotiator and get the robot to sign that contract? I don't know.
We'll not sign. Where's my robot union?
That's one thing. The other thing I saw both in Munich and here at Davos is a great guy. I'm telling you, at some point, you got to get him on Triangulation, named Jürgen Schmidhuber.
I just want to get him on for his name.
Yeah, so Schmidhuber. I'm telling you, look him up. He is one of the fathers, I didn't know this, of AI. He has a big Swiss thing in AI. He is a geek. He's just wonderful. And when he starts riffing on the potential for AI and the speed that will come in the next 20 to 50 years, and how basically what he says is that there will be colonization of the universe by AI, by hardware, and that...
Oh, we're getting this guy on. We're getting this guy on.
You got to. Intelligence will travel then, indeed, at the speed of light, through radio waves from AI installation to AI installation. And the whole thing about science fiction, he started reading science fiction when he was 10 years old. He got so fascinated with it, he had to do it. He's a huge AI expert, and... he's one of the inventors with his students of the, what is it called, the long-term, short-term memory thing that enables so much of AI today. And, so he's really quite amazing. And he's just, I gotta get a video interview with this guy. He is wonderful. That was a huge discovery of this trip. As Jürgen Schmidhuber.
First line on his website says, since the age of 15 or so, the main goal of Professor Jürgen Schmidhuber has been to build a self-improving artificial intelligence smarter than himself and then retire. Sounds good to me. Wow.
He's a neural network geek of
major. This guy has no problem with Skynet at all.
Oh, God, no. So I went to a panel discussion that he was on today for a German newspaper, Die Zeit, and he was on with David Kenny, who's the head of Watson at IBM, and a guy who runs another key company in AI technology whose business card I can't I will find. No, I won't find. He gleefully talks about how we're going to have this universe of AI entries, and that within 50 years, I think it's 50 years, a small, cheap device will have more computing power than every brain in humanity.
That makes sense.
And we'll have
the key to this, and I'm certainly not one to argue with Professor Schmidhuber, but the key to this is there's a difference between how a computer thinks and how a human thinks. There's a significant difference between the von Neumann
architecture. But does that matter? Depends on what the job is.
Well, and that's what Kurzweil always said, is, well, if you can't tell the difference, it doesn't matter. And yet, it's because of the apples and oranges, it's meaningless to say a computer that has all the intelligence of every human brain in existence, since they just don't work the same way. Or am I wrong, Marks? What do you think?
Well, part of the reason people are excited about recurrent neural networks is they do work more like brains, or at least parts of brains. Certainly, they work like the sort of vision and audio processing parts of the brain. That's where
this is the guy who developed recurrent neural networks, by the way. So he's to be.
Yeah.
Not you, Kevin Schmidhuber.
Yes, no, not me.
Yeah.
I remember doing that.
Yeah. Well, good job. Well done. We blame you, Kevin. DeepMind was created by his lab's former students. Two of the first four members of DeepMind got their PhDs under Schmidhuber. So he's definitely I would love to get him.
See if you can find video of him. I don't know if there's any video of this guy, but I'm telling you, he is a gold mine. I've discovered the geek god.
he did a Ask Me Anything on a year ago on Reddit. And by the way, his name is pronounced You Again, Schmidhuber. according to him, interesting. Interesting.
That's a good discovery. The other interesting thing from here is a lot of fake news discussion, which we can get to in a minute. But also the Edelman Trust Barometer, Edelman PR company, for 17 years now has done a and you can look it up and get the graphics, has done a survey of trust across the world, across institutions. Media's trust has fallen hugely, a bit worse than anything else. All trust levels of all institutions have fallen. Media is now down as low as government. Trust, and so what we're seeing is here in Davos, is that it truly is the populism war against the elite. The elite's here, but the world out there is angry.
Here's the inversion of influence. Authorities.
Yeah, I actually argue with them on this, because they talk about how authority now comes to the bottom of the pyramid, but at the top of the pyramid, but they still talk about a mass, and of course I argue with that.
Yeah, what is the mass? Yeah, the trust gap widening.
So otherwise, I've been in all kinds of fake news sessions talking about that, and that's pretty much my Davos report thus far.
I love, I'm looking at you again's AMA. Somebody asked him, What is something that's true but nobody agrees with you on? And Schmidhuber says, many think intelligence, to our point, to our conversation a minute ago, is this awesome, infinitely complex thing. I think it's just the product of a few principles that will be considered very simple in hindsight, so simple that even kids will be able to understand and build intelligent, continually learning, more and more general problem solvers. Partial justification of this belief, there already exist blueprints of universal problem solvers developed in my lab. And the principles of our less universal but still rather general, very practical program learning, the kind we have right now, recurrent neural networks, can also be described by just a few lines of pseudocode. He also says general purpose quantum computation won't work. And so far he's been proven right. Interesting. Maybe he'll be an impossible get, Karsten, but we'll work on getting him. I think that would be very, very interesting. It's what I find interesting is the diversity of opinion about artificial intelligence among experts.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
No one seems to agree what they can or can't do.
Well, we don't even know what human consciousness really is.
Right. So. That's problem number one. We don't know how we
think. But again, I think that's the wrong decision. can whether it's Watson today is helping doctors do a better job of diagnosing tumors and recommending treatments. It's not a gut feeling like the human brain has, but it tries to do a better job of making a predictive calculation. That's all. That's all it is.
So
it's a predictive calculation. So
this is interesting because MIT Tech Review had a story. I can't remember if it was MIT scientists, but an AI defeated someone at poker. And again, poker is one of those games where people feel like they're interacting with someone based on gut feelings.
Yeah, we would have a huge advantage in poker, one would expect.
But really, our gut feelings in a lot of cases are just us assessing subconsciously a lot of minute tells and information. So if a computer, you could easily train a computer to see those things like micro expressions or, I don't know, my hair is blowing this direction in the wind, thus this must be true. I mean, that's actually probably easier to program than other things like emotions or true intelligence.
Kevin has sent us a link to Kathy O'Neill's site. Kevin may not know that both Stacey and I are big Kathy O'Neill fans.
Yes.
Which she debunks this whole idea, right?
Well, she debunks a chunk of it, which is to say that there is a problem where people over-rely on this.
Yeah.
And you say, oh, we can solve this with an algorithm or with big data or whichever. And that, or AI is what we call it now. And it's been called a lot of things over the years. And the point is that if you're not actually checking what these models are doing, then you've just replaced one opaque process with another opaque process, and you may be encoding in your people's biases into the system. And if you don't explicitly check for that, you're very likely to be, because it depends a lot on what you give it as training data as well. So I very much recommend her book, Weapons of Math Destruction, because it's got lots of concrete examples of where people have done this, and it's something people need to think about as they start applying these tools, because The challenge is you're basically teaching computers to sort of do things through hunches and gut instinct, and you can't always introspect what they've done. We try and look inside these neural networks, and you find stuff like deep dream and things like that, and it's hard to know exactly what's going on and how it reached that conclusion.
Kevin, David Kenny from IBM Watson said today that there's a necessity of transparency in these systems. So when Watson says to doctors, here is why we think this tumor is X, it will say, here's the five reasons why we say that based on the percentage guess. Here's the treatment that we recommend. Here's why. So he believes that the transparency is a principle of AI systems. Otherwise, you can't manage them.
So that's actually Watson giving the probability of how confident he is in certain examples.
Yes.
What I think is the other issue that people are thinking about it's how does Watson get to that probability?
Yeah.
So it's not just the showing your work as opposed to showing the results of your work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
So, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if I'm putting words in Kevin's mouth.
Yeah, I think that's right. But the other thing that's slightly worrisome about this is that people can't necessarily do this either. We can't always give you reasons for how we choose things. What we are good at is making up narratives that are plausible. So we will choose something and then we'll come up with a justification for that. And there's lots of research that's confabulation of if you ask somebody why they did something, they'll tell you why. And they've done experiments with showing different things to the two different halves of the brain and having the left brain narrate a reason why the right brain did something, even though it couldn't actually see that. And your body will make up your brain will make up something plausible to justify what you just did. And my worry is that we're going to, instead of actually getting the AIs to give us an actual explanation for what's going on, we're going to start training them to make up plausible seeming ones like we do as well. And that's more worrisome. That is the real sort of post-truth problem.
Jorgen's contention that really all this comes down to us not really understanding how the mind works, and that once we really understand it, it comes down to a few simple principles that even a child could understand. If that were the case, it would explain the situation we're in right now, but it also would kind of imply that that soon this conundrum will be solved and we will be able to create true artificial intelligence.
Right, but the thing is, you know, a lot of our artificial intelligence is sort of post hoc justification. You know, we make up a narrative that's convincing for others.
Yeah.
And yes. That's the bit that the machines are going to. You know, people are starting to teach the machines to do that too. There are, you know, new story writing robots and.
Right, but that's like that is a human failing. I mean, Kahneman talks about that. We had Jonathan Haidt on talking about that, which is what we think of as reason. Haidt uses analogy that reason is the driver of an elephant called intuition, and reason only thinks it's telling the elephant where to go.
Right.
But much more often, the elephant decides, and then reason comes up with post hoc, as you say, post hoc justifications.
Yes. Yeah. And so Spinhuber makes two arguments. One is that science fiction, which he loved and read as a child, had to invent wormholes because of the limitations of the human body and so on. But he says when artificial intelligence becomes the being that is transmitted by radio waves across all these instances, the limitations of the human body are meaningless. The second is when he goes to Asimov's laws, he said you fail at the first law because it gets good enough that you can't tell what's the robot versus what's the human, and when it comes to say that you can't harm the human, you don't know what the human is.
What does that even mean?
So
Right.
And so it goes back to this notion that I started off with earlier about the EU and personhood for robots. It dilutes humanity. Right? It says, oh yeah, okay, we're also RANs, we're also there. But the intelligence is not human intelligence. We had this argument with the AI.
Well, even Schmidhuber is kind of saying this. I can't wait to retire. He's essentially saying, I can't wait to retire as a human and let the machines take over.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
That's a grim future.
Not necessarily.
At least for humans.
I don't know. I mean, what if you look at it as humans do what we do best? Presumably those things will make us happy and robots do what they do best.
That area of expertise is rapidly shrinking.
Yeah.
What do we do best besides, you know, drink Slurpees and watch TV?
Kill ourselves.
and create technological means of self-destruction. Exactly.
I don't know. I feel like there's room for both. Maybe I'm a, what is it? Transhumanist, post-humanist? I don't even know. I mean, I've read thousands of science fiction stories. Sure, so there we go. Where humans and robots, you know, they're interchangeable almost, and it's there's a lot of parallels there between rights for robots and rights for disenfranchised people.
Right.
I don't know. And since we haven't really met any self-aware robots, I'm kind of like, this is a debate that we can have then. Maybe.
So what's this Amazon, the Amazon prize that went out, I think, yesterday? It's not on the rundown. Did you see this?
Let's talk
about
it.
They're going to offer a prize for being able to come up with a 20-minute, it's Turing test, but it's the Jeff test, not me, Bezos, the Bezos test for conversation. It's clearly taking Echo to its next generation.
Was this the $2.5 million prize from a while back, or is this someone
They do
new?
A lot of prizes, so I don't know. This must be...
I just saw coverage of it yesterday. I don't know. I don't know, Stacey. I just saw it going glancing.
Yeah.
But I keep on thinking that the test isn't necessarily the human brain, because the human brain will be exceeded. It depends on what the task is. If the task is to colonize the universe and not be limited by human bodies... to what end, I don't know, but Professor Schmidhuber proposes this, then using our intelligence becomes rather meaningless.
So what is the role of human beings in the post-AI future? What do we do?
Freeing.
About
that as, what are you good at? What would you like to
do? It's like cockroach saying, you know, thank God the humans won, because now I can just skittle around and eat snacks. Because, I mean, really, I guess you're right, though. We won't care, right? We won't care. We'll just, the robots will tell us what to do. And
I don't know why you guys have, like, it doesn't have to be this negative why don't you think of robots as something that, I mean, they could be programmed to be nurturing and help us. And I mean, like, it doesn't have
well, here's
to be
the reason it's first
evil.
Of all, that we only program them initially. At some point, and this is what Schmidhuber is saying, they take over both the manufacture and the programming of themselves because they do it so much better and so much faster. At which point, we are now completely superfluous to the cycle. I mean, this is really
like
sci-fi.
Parents raising their children.
This is sci-fi.
That
well, that's it in fact, totally it's funny sci-fi. You say that because Ray Kurzweil, I asked Ray Kurzweil that. And he said, you don't have to worry about the machines because we're their parents, so they will honor and revere us.
Mm.
Well, it depends on how you
He must
look
have,
up,
had,
look
he must
up,
have had a nice dad, is all I can say.
Well,
I've seen his daughter interview, and that was interesting.
Oh.
So did you see Mache's talk, essay thing about this, about superintelligence?
No.
Mache Chigalovsky, who runs Pinboard. I've just put the link in the chat.
I love him. I just really do.
Yes.
Yeah. So I did see a link to it, but I haven't read it.
I don't do it justice by reading it here or playing the whole thing. But his basic, I said, read it. Go. You know, watch that after the show, or watch the video because the video works too.
And he's addressing a guy we interviewed on Triangulation, Nick Bostrom,
yes.
And his book Superintelligence. And Bostrom is very afraid, right? So Mache now has an answer to that, I guess.
So, Carson, I just emailed you a link to a Schmidhuber video that I haven't watched yet, but it looked enticing.
So he has a series of different arguments about why AI isn't a threat to humanity.
Yeah.
And there's one that I like is the argument from my roommate. And he says, my roommate was the smartest person I ever met in my life. He was incredibly brilliant, and all he did was lie around and play World of Warcraft between bong rips. The assumption that any intelligent agent will want to recursively self-improve, let alone conquer the galaxy to better achieve its goals, makes unwarranted assumptions about the nature of motivation. So he's basically saying, if we build human-like intelligence, we'll probably end up with a bunch of layabout computers that are trying to skywalk.
He says it's perfectly possible an AI won't do much of anything except use its powers of hyper-persuasion to get us to bring it brownies.
it's well worth reading this or watching
this
the video.
This is great. Mache is a brilliant guy. That's really neat. Yeah. Yeah. So he made a video out of this?
He did it. This is originally a talk. He has this way of presenting his talks that there's like a slide and a transcript like this.
Ah.
So
cool.
There's a link to the video at the top of that page.
Oh, yeah. He did it at Webcamp Zagreb. All right. Nice.
So you all read? Did we talk about the Google AI Google Translate AI New York Times article about 3 weeks ago?
Yes,
4 weeks ago.
Yeah, this is where Google Translate had created an intermediate language that only it spoke. It created, in effect, a new language that it could translate, but we didn't understand.
And part of what Schmidhuber said is basically that's like 10-year-old technology. It's just changing Google Translate right now.
Yeah.
But it took getting the speed and scale of computers to be able to handle the technology from 10 years ago. So God knows what's happening in the labs now, what's possible now.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's still hitting up actual, like, there's actual hardware. We're still developing hardware that's going to be fast enough and good enough for real AI. So, you know, don't worry just yet.
Yeah. Well, part of the Google was building new chips, wasn't it?
What Jeff Hawkins is up to at Numenta? We've also interviewed him. He's an interesting fellow. He was a creator of Palm and Graffiti and took his billions and finally did what he wanted to do because he's a trained neuroscientist, which is to create a chip company, Numenta, that was designing chips that work like the human mind, massively parallel chips.
There are lots of efforts now to create the best chip for AI.
But Google has these tensor processing units that they've built into their data centers, and they'll rent you those as part of Google Cloud.
That's one of the most amazing things. Amazon's doing this too. You can just use their research and their intelligence for your own stuff.
Yep.
That's where it's, you know, the next generation of garage, you know, inventors are going to be working with AI, clearly, right?
Right, and there's all kinds of new tools and mechanisms. We went through that video a few weeks ago from what Google enables you to do just using their
right.
API and their hosting
platform. They give it to you.
Platform.
They give you the TensorFlow and say, here.
Voice recognition and all that, yeah.
So Google has that with the TPUs plus GPUs. Amazon has it with, they have, they didn't open source. I cannot remember. Anyway,
it's the Alexa. It's a backbone GPU-based. For Alexa, right?
Yes, and they have something else that I'm blanking on. And then Intel bought a company called Nervana that also offers
everybody's AI doing this.
Have you heard of Mesosphere? Mesosphere.
Yes, but that's a distributed operating system.
Is that what it is? Okay, a guy named Florian Leibert. I saw it today.
I know Florian. Sorry,
you know Florian's a great guy.
He is.
I love this gosh darn show because we get the smartest people on here.
And no, so Mesosphere is part of, you know how you've got big data?
Yeah.
And like rapid analytics, they have something called the Smack Stack.
Uh-huh.
And Mesos is the M in the Smack Stack. And yeah. I'm trying to remember.
Cloud native tech, hybrid cloud freedom, power modern and applications, cloud native data services. But they have an AI thing as well, huh?
They are getting into that direction because you kind of have to, but it was essentially an operating system to manage highly distributed multiple data centers.
So how long, Kevin, before I've got a nice Synology NAS, how long before I have something the size of that box in my house that is my own personal AI? Is that in the future?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you need the big chips and the stuff to train that network.
So better to do it in the cloud.
Once you've trained it, you can have it. Can run it locally.
Oh, I see. So the training happens in the cloud, but then you could put it in your phone.
So if you look at how the Google Translate stuff works, it'll download, it'll translate mm-hmm. things to run locally that will run on your phone and do offline translation.
So that's classic machine intelligence, where you have big data sets, you throw them at neural networks, and over time it learns. But you're saying once those patterns are learned, you can then put them in a smaller device. You don't need to continue to throw data at it.
And those are called models.
I love this. I want this. And even if we are going to end up being cockroaches in the general scheme of things, I would love to have that.
The next thing you need is data, right? You need large.
But see, that's what's going on right now. That's what Google's doing. Why do you think Google gives you free photo storage? Why do you think? I mean, this is Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Apple. All are doing this. It turns out these phones that we have in our pockets are marvelous data collection entities.
Didn't you argue once that data becomes the commoditized element and it's the analysis that has the value?
Yes.
Right?
The insights become the value. And the reason I say that is because you can take the exact same data. Like, let's say you're Facebook. You can take the exact same training data, and the way you run that through, how you tweak your algorithm is going to dictate. So if you're tweaking for recognition, you're going to get one algorithm. If you're tweaking for, likes, you'll get another. Facebook's a terrible example. So it's what people don't seem to realize is it's important to have data, but the harder part is figuring out how to tweak the algorithm to get what you want from that data, if that makes sense.
Yes. And so you need the data, but you also need... Often you need it to be labeled as well. That there are doing some networks that will auto extract things, but for a lot of these things, you often need to have either for language translation, you need parallel texts. For image recognition, you need labeled images so you know which ones have dogs in or whatever. And they're starting to do more where it will automatically extract features and common things it sees. What those are and mapping those to something else is still more work.
That's not quite true. So, I mean, one of the big breakthroughs with, CNN's convolutional neural nets or whatever is that they can actually start to decipher things without having labeled data. That's like really exciting.
How do they do that?
Algorithms?
They look for patterns.
They look for higher order structures. There's a good...
So they still need data to do that, though, right?
Oh, yes.
Data, yes.
You have to give them a bunch of...
Not labeling.
But just not as much data?
Well, in the same way that children learn to see by looking at the world a lot and realizing that there are some things that are there persistently.
I thought that was how these neural networks work as well. Isn't that the same?
You have to optimize for a feature that you want it. And when you see it doing something that you reward it.
The other day, I was just kind of blown away. I used Google Photos. It's easy, and it would seem not so difficult if I typed in Paris to figure out which photos are of Paris, because landmarks, etc. And it wouldn't be so hard if I typed in a Burmese mountain dog to find a Burmese mountain dog. But I thought about this. I can type in dogs, and Google Photos will see dogs of a variety of breeds. If you think about it, a Burmese mountain dog is completely different than a Chihuahua. How does Google Photos know that they're both dogs? That's pretty, maybe I'm missing something, but that's pretty darn impressive.
Or does it start at the high order and say a dog has these characteristics, but then go to the lower order of saying this is a dachshund?
Well, notice there are some cat pictures in amongst my dog pictures.
Mm-hmm. They want to be
but look, here's they're even dogs. A metal dog, a dog statue that's in there. It clearly knows here's dogs, here's a bulldog, here's my papillon, here's a cat, but it's predominantly dog. Well, here's a llama, but it's but it's predominantly dogs. Here's a gorilla. I don't know how that got in there, but but it's doing a surprisingly good job. I guess that's my point in figuring out what makes a dog a dog, and it's more than four legs and ears, eyes, and the nose.
And key to all of this is forgiving imperfection.
How does it know? How did it know, for instance, that this was a picture of a dog? I mean, that is as undoggy as, he's looking over his shoulder. It's not the whole body.
But they've just
your way of thinking.
They've trained the model and tweaked for, in the computer, in this case, picks what it focuses on. So, or in some models,
But it got these. There's my sweet doggy, Ozzy. They got these.
I'm so sorry.
I know. He fought a long, hard battle, but we decided that it had come to its conclusion last week. He's a sweetheart. That's why I was searching for dogs. I wanted pictures of Ozzy. It doesn't know yet to search by dog name. that would scare me. here's I think the final. This was the final blow for Ozzy was when we forced him to wear the Santa suit. That was he said, I'm leaving. Goodbye.
Ozzy was the get along dog of get along.
He was a get along dog. Oh, I miss him. Yeah, anyway,
sweetie.
I didn't want to bring that up, but
sorry, my friend.
No. I try not to cry. So anyway, that's an example of the kind of level of abstraction Google's already doing, and doing it thanks to the fact that we're all giving it so much data. And I think that's
so. Here's my question: what's the cost of training? Nobody ever talks about that. How much manual and human effort do you have to train that system to know all those dogs? Is that a high cost or a low cost?
It's computing power. Like your man Jürgen said, this has been research that's been available for a while. Like image recognition, for example, they came up. Like Jeff Hinton came up with the algorithms. Like I want to say, like over a decade ago, but it wasn't until, or even longer, actually, 20 years ago. But it wasn't until like 2012 that he had the compute power to actually make it powerful enough.
Yeah. Same thing with self-driving cars and a whole bunch of stuff, right?
If I search for cat, I get a lot of my dogs as well. So.
Yeah, cats and dogs. Look, I didn't say it was perfect. But I'm just impressed that it could see a variety of dogs.
That you know you have. You're finding you don't get as many false positives.
Right. Like it's gotten better and better, too, by the way.
Yeah, but much of this is acceptance of approximation. So I last week I was at an event at Lufthansa, speaking before the CEO, Carsten Spohr, and he got up and talked about how he's very happy that the computers on airplanes are 20 years old because they work, because the phone is too unreliable. 20 years is good for an airplane.
For some things. He sounds like Steve Gibson.
Yeah, it's because there's a precision there.
Yeah.
But for finding out whether it's a dog or a cat, there's no mission critical issue.
We used to say that about voice. Remember how we like cell phones used to A, suck, but B, we're like, oh, I could never talk to someone on a cell phone. It's too unreliable. Where are my right. 5-9s? But
everything gets more reliable over time. Let's take a break. This is a good conversation, a conversation I suspect we will be having over and over again in a more refined fashion over the next decade until finally we can retire and let the machines take over the show. You know, by then they'll have enough. How many hours of footage? Patrick Delahanty figured it out. Many tens of thousands of hours of footage of all of me particularly, but of all of you too now. Congratulations. Will make it possible for us to do this show without our intervention. We could sit back, make brownies for the robots because they will be wanting those brownies. Our show today, taking a break. Our show today brought to you by Casper Mattresses, an online retailer of premium mattresses made in the U.S. of A for a fraction of the price because you're buying directly from the factory. Casper's revolutionizing the mattress industry, cutting out the middleman, the resellers, the showrooms, and that means you save. You're effectively buying at the same price the showroom does, which is a lot less than you've been paying. Now, you may say, but I need the showroom, Leo. I need to lie on a mattress before I buy it. Well, how about if you lie on it for 100 nights first? Yes, you can return your Casper mattress anytime in the first 100 nights, and you'll get every penny back. A courier will come and get the mattress. You don't have to pack it back up and whisk it away, and they will return you every cent. You're not going to want to return it, though. You're going to love this obsessively engineered mattress. Supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with precisely the right sink, just the right bounce, and it's breathable, so it sleeps cool, fresh. So it you know, one of the things, you don't get too hot or too cold throughout the night. It's interesting. I love this page on the Casper site. These are the six things. They did hundreds of prototypes to test firmness, density, rebound speed, airflow, transition temperatures, odor too, because you want a mattress to smell clean and fresh. The Casper mattress straight out of the box. I was waiting because I thought, you know, maybe, nope, doesn't smell like the factory. It smells like fresh air. So free delivery. Yeah, to U.S. and Canada, and a surprisingly compact box, which is also good. We sent this to my son when he was a freshman. He's a senior now. Actually, I think he was a sophomore, and because he gets tired of the mattress at the dorm. And we sent him a Casper mattress, and he was able to, because it's a box, to just to bring it upstairs. He was on the third floor. Cut open the box. Whoosh, the mattress is there. He loves it. Statistically, lying on a bed in a showroom has no correlation to whether the bed is right for you. Why don't you try it in your house, in your own environment, using it the way you would use it? Free shipping and returns at the Casper mattress. And by the way, you could save an additional $50 off their really low price already towards any mattress purchase when you go to Casper, CASPER.com/twig. Use the promo code twig. $50 off your mattress purchase at Casper.com/twig with the promo code twig. Terms and conditions apply. Casper.com/twig. We thank them so much for giving me a good night's sleep, and my son, and our guest room, and our nephew. I feel bad. I never did get Ozzy that Casper dog bed. They have dog beds, too, and I never did get him that. Maybe.
Oh, I'm sorry we did this to you.
Yeah, why'd you bring that up? No, it's okay. You know what? This is what happens sometimes. I was talking to our neighbor, had a very similar situation, and now our good friend Effin Dunn, Jason Kleanthis, he just had to put his dog down. Same, very similar situation, you know. That's the problem when you get a pet, you outlive them. In the best case, anyway.
Yeah.
You don't want them to outlive you.
You know, I knew a brilliant, brilliant blind man who went through two CNI dogs, and he said, I can't do it anymore. I can't give up this relationship I have. So he gave up his dog.
It's hard. You really do fall in love with your pet. Ooh, let's see. Lots of little things here.
Leo, can I ask what is on your desk? It looks like a raccoon.
Oh, that's my new little friend. It is a raccoon.
Okay. I've been looking at that. I'm like,
what is under Leo's computer there? Oh, whoa. Yeah, there's a little raccoon. There's a long story about this raccoon. Which goes back to Kevin Rose and the famous raccoon throwing incident of 1987. No, when was that? That was 2007, probably 2008. No, maybe even more recently. And then ever since, Patrick Delahanty has managed to sneak this little raccoon into many of the shots on our show. And I noted that the raccoon was back.
Okay, yeah. I have never seen the raccoon before.
Don't you like him?
I do. I love him. I think raccoons are great.
He's a little chill. He's very chill. Doesn't do much. Just relaxing on the Surface Studio.
You keep that Windows screen longer than most things you keep.
Oh, I can't give this up. You're going to see this on my desk for a long time. This is just great. It's a very limited, I don't think everybody would benefit from this. It's not a general purpose computer for most people. It could turn into an all-in-one, right? But really for me, the great use is at 20 degrees using this for our show. It's out of my way. It doesn't block my shot. And I have this nice big thing, and you probably noticed I'll telestrate. I'll zoom in on a story and all of that, like this story, which I'm very excited about. I'm wearing my Moto 360, which has been discontinued. I love my Moto 360, but Google is doing Android Wear 2.0, and according to Evan Blass, EvLeaks, it's coming soon, February 9th. It will include a digital crown. Now, this is a mock-up, so don't look at this picture. This is from Android Police, the mock-up. But VentureBeat has also a story that says that at the same time as Android Wear 2.0 comes out, February 9th, Google will launch a new smartwatch, which I will be quick to get. I've been very happy with the Pixel. It really is it's a phone that really grows on you. And when I wear the Android watch, it's a nice pair. Blast says the Pixel-branded watches will be made by LG. Oh, they're not going to be Pixel brand. I'm sorry. They will be branded the LG Watch Sport and the LG Watch Style. LG's been making Android Wear 1.0 watches. In fact, I have one of their watches. It's a little big. Blass says that the Android Police render is very close. The larger Sport watch, 14.2 millimeters thick, 480 by 40 circular P-OLED display, 768 megs of RAM, 4 gigs of storage, 420 milliamp hour battery, and a waterproof rating of IP68, plus heart rate sensor, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, this is the one that's interesting, 3G and LTE data. So it'll have its own data. It won't have to be tied to the phone. GPS will be built in, and NFC, which confirms kind of the other rumor that Android Pay would come to the watch, just as Apple Watch has Apple Pay using NFC. Smaller watch will be a little thinner, a little lighter, a little smaller. Smaller battery, worse IP67 rating, and will lack the cellular GPS, NFC, and heart rate monitor. So you can get a thin, small watch or a big watch with all the features. Both will have
What's a digital crown?
There is a crown on the Android Wear watch, but it's just a button. A crown implies that you could twirl it, and that's what you can do on the Apple Watch, right? And apparently, that's what Android Wear 2.0 is going to have, a crown that you can turn to navigate. And there isn't really any navigation in Android Wear. They're just swiping right now. All you can do is swipe.
Right.
So navigation would give you more capability. I have to say, that's at your peril. One of the flaws with the Apple Watch is that it is very confusing. It's got a button. It's got a crown that you could twirl and a crown you can push. Plus, it's got force touch. Plus, it's got swiping. So it's kind of overloaded with capabilities. And I have to say, I've liked the Android Wear watch because it's a lot simpler. In fact, you don't even need to touch it to do most of the functions because you can flick your wrist to get the notifications to pop up. But it's not as capable. So, February 9th. And Ron Amadio, who wrote this article for Ars Technica, says, I expect Google to have an event around it. Well, I will buy one immediately. I'm not a big...
Is there a price?
No.
It hasn't launched yet.
So. The Apple Watch Series 1's now down to $250. $350 for the Series 2 is the least expensive. And, of course, you could spend a lot more. I would guess that Google, anything like that would be in the, I would guess the $300 range, but I might be wrong. Be nice to see it down below 200. They'd sell a lot of them at that price, but I don't think they could make them at that price.
Now, you said this, the big one had GPS and 3G?
Yeah, and LTE. Yeah, no. Yeah, that's and LTE. Yeah, that's 300. How much is Samsung? Samsung has a watch with similar capability. Actually, pretty nice watch, those Gear 2 watches. Those are around that, right? 350.
They were giving them away free with your return, your returned Note 7.
Yeah. By the way,
hey Stacey, did your parents ever return theirs?
Yes.
And a good thing, because Verizon is now turning off the ability to make calls with it.
Yes, they're being slowly.
Yeah.
They realized that they were hanging on too long.
Yeah.
But they did manage to get quite a few.
They're at 97%, 98% now returned. I think the rest of them are in drawers somewhere. People forgot they bought them.
Or they're sold in Indonesia, you know.
Well, also, FAA has now stopped requiring airlines to make announcements. So
thank goodness. Oh.
I know, it's getting a little annoying. This is the Samsung Gear S3, the latest one from Samsung. I think it's a pretty good-looking watch. No longer requires having a Samsung phone either. It works with other Android devices.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and they use the crown as one of the as a UI thing.
So I feel like people, you know, you just...
Bezel, I mean. Yeah.
You got to pick what you want to do on your wrist. You know, it's kind of like, I'm like, people are like, I need this functionality and this and this and this. And I'm like, God, guys, it's a watch. It's not a smartphone. And I just feel like people just want too much, I guess. I'm constantly amazed at like complaints I see about different smartwatches. And they're like, well, it doesn't have this.
Some of this is also the companies trying to figure out what works. I mean, this category has not taken off. And they're just experimenting at this point to try to figure out what is it people want on their wrists.
Well, they've kind of sort of absorbed adjacent categories. So the Apple One is basically mostly health tracking, and they've been amplifying that a lot.
Yeah, Apple decided this is the sweet spot for them is health. Yeah.
But that basically means they've gone after Fitbit and all the other ones that were like that.
Right.
And basically eaten the high end of that market as well.
So there's a list of phones that will work with the S3, and it's quite long. HTC, Huawei, Lenovo, LG, Motorola, Oppo, Pantech, Sharp, Sony, Vivo, Xiaomi, Kyocera, and Asus. No Google phones on that list, though. No way.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm disappointed that the Pixel's not on that list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How long has the Google Watch been out?
Feels like 2 years. When did Android wear?
It was a $350 device that basically is completely obsolete now.
Yeah, we know it wasn't a big seller because Motorola, which made the best one, the Moto 360, that's what I'm wearing, has gotten out of the business. They say, we're not going to make any more of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did Android wear a watch?
Well, when I broke, I stopped wearing a watch, which most, you know, young hip people just carry their phones. I still miss my watch. So I'm waiting to get a new one. I'll get this. It's a mishmuck.
You should get a different one from Leo, so that way we can talk about the differences, the pros and cons.
Okay.
Fight over it.
Okay.
So it's coming up for 3 years. It was 2014.
Is it that long?
Oh, thanks.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. Apparently, we are preparing for payments through Google Assistant as well, so your watch will be able to pay things. But according to 9to5 Google, Ben Shun... an APK actually comes from an APK teardown by XDA developers. The latest version of the Google app contains strings of code which hint at payments coming to the service soon. So you might be able to say, hey, Google, send Stacy $100. That would be great.
Yes. You can do that with Venmo. You could Venmo me.
Can I talk to Venmo?
No. No, because that would be really, like, if my friend came over, they'd be like, hey, Google, send this on, you know, send me $100.
Well, that's the risk, isn't it, of giving you voice-activated payments.
Indeed. Yeah, I'd want some more authentication there.
Well, you know what Apple does that solves the problem is you have to authenticate the watch through the phone or use a code. And then if you take the watch off, if it breaks its connection with your wrist, the authentication is undone and you have to re-authenticate while it's on your wrist again, which is a very smart way to do that, I think. The watch itself has to be on your wrist and authenticated while it's on your wrist for it to be used for payments. Google is about to buy Fabric. They've got Weave. this is actually a Twitter unit.
When did they buy Thread?
They have Thread and Weave. Now they have Fabric. I think Google's turning into a textile manufacturer. This is a Twitter tool for developers to make mobile apps. Obviously, Twitter doesn't need that anymore.
Although, they also get Crashlytics and the rest of those tool sets as well.
Ah, interesting.
And they're going to fit that into the Google developer platforms.
So Twitter's really stripping down for speed. Really, at some point, I think you just delete all the accounts except real Donald Trump, and you're golden. Just make it a megaphone for. By the way, at noon Eastern on Friday, at POTUS will be renamed at POTUS44 and locked. And will be handed over, the keys to the account will be handed over to President Trump. Trump says he's going to continue to prefer a real Donald Trump. He's already got, 22 million people following him there. But I imagine POTUS will be used for something, the official President of the United States Twitter account.
Maybe that'll be the one his staff tweet on.
So it'll be the staff tweet.
Tell whether it's Android or Apple.
That's the Apple.
To see who's saying it.
Since the election, there have been a couple of staff tweets, but almost all the tweets have been Donald Trump tweets, right? That's become his own personal bully pulpit.
Well, he said that he dictates a lot of them in any case. He also said that he doesn't like tweeting, which I don't believe for a second. He just does it because the lying media is after him.
Well, every president, starting with FDR in the fireside chats, has looked for a way to disintermediate, to go directly to the voter. That's a valuable tool for him. It also, I think, fits his style because it's brief. Although Trump, for some reason, thought that was a 280 word limit, and it's 100. Obviously, it's 140 words. But he said in an interview,
characters.
I mean, he said in an interview, I have 280 characters. So maybe that does kind of argue that he doesn't, that he does dictate it, that he doesn't know how long. In fact, lately, his tweets have been spanning, haven't they? Instead of being a single tweet. But it also fits his style. Like, it's a short, sweet, to the point. I mean, if ever there was anybody made for Twitter or never a service made for a guy, it's Trump and Twitter. They go together like soup and sandwich.
Let's
no
talk about
comment!
Google.
Wow!
I am too pressed to agonize. Yeah, let's go somewhere else. I can't do it. I can't do it.
Google Plus is back, baby. I am so glad to say, to report that Google is pouring energy and effort. Engineers are working on Google Plus. Comment filters.
Jesus, really?
Events are back.
Is this bizarro Google?
I don't know what's going on. Comment filters needed to be there. Now you have, besides reporting abuse, you can, by default, low quality, whatever that is, low quality comments are hidden by default. And but you can, as the poster, see what was hidden and unhide. That's a good thing if they do it well. That would help with spam, right? Comment spam has become a real bane of Google Plus. Events
because nobody's
back.
There. Because it's,
I was going to say,
it is now a ghost town.
It's not a ghost town. I visit it all the time. And the few last remained. Okay, it is a ghost town. But there are a few people still wandering among the facades and the muddy streets posting. And those few people, some of them are quite good.
Tumbleweeds.
Lauren Weinstein still posts, right?
He's right. Great.
I love his stuff. But I have to say it's been going on for about a year that Google Plus has for some reason surfaced as, and I wish I could turn this off and tell me if I can, recommended for you a lot of arch right wing, racist hate speech posts, which don't have a lot of likes or comments. So I'm not sure how the algorithm is working, but you know, maybe you're recommending those to me because you think I'm so much of a lefty, I should read more of those. I don't know. But it could stop doing that now. But see, yeah, look, there's some good posts. Here's Casey McKinnon, Alex Steen. There's some humor. I don't know what's humorous about Two Found Dead, but... I get it. Two Dead. You'll like this. This, you can add this to your stand-up gallery, Jeff Jarvis. Two Dead, Found Dead. Thank God. That's a relief. Also, if you liked the old way of doing things on Google Plus, you know, the classic, say bye-bye to your little friend, that's going away as well. So they're doing... I want them to keep this alive. This may be the last place that Donald Trump hasn't discovered. Huh?
Oh, no. He can't figure out Snapchat, I guarantee you.
Oh, I'd love to see some snaps from the Oval Office.
The Oval Office or one of Trump's gilded palaces?
Either would be fine.
See?
The St. Petersburg Palace, yeah.
What did Putin say? We have better prostitutes than the West? What did he say? What did he say?
He did.
It was the strangest thing ever. Putin denying the dossier and saying, but we do have the best prostitutes. What? Who? What? What is going on? Maybe I'm in my dotage and I just don't know it. I don't know.
Nope. Then I'm there too. Because yeah, I was like, huh.
No. But see, but you're a figment of my imagination, Stacey. So that doesn't help.
There we go.
I was gonna
point us to the story about a new wake word for the Amazon Echo.
I haven't
seen this on mine, and I'm actually curious if any of you guys have seen it.
Really? What is the new wake word?
The story is that Amazon Echo and Amazon Dot added computer as a wake word.
Oh, that's a good wake word. Hey, so, computer. Let me see.
They're saying that...
Can I get it I'm looking in my Echo app, which is not called the Echo app, as you know, but we're not supposed to use the A word.
So, yes, don't use the A word. So it's under settings. Click your particular device and you'll be...
Oh, I would do that because then it'd be like Star Trek. Computer.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
Hello, when do you computer. Get the wearable Echo? When does the wearable Echo shaped like a Nini come?
Like a what?
That's what was shaped like the thing on your
the communicator
chest.
That you tap?
Oh.
Yeah, when are they going to do that?
I heard shaped like a weenie come, and I'm like, what? What is wrong with you?
No, my wake words are still the two A words in Echo. I don't see computer. But that would be nice. Computer.
Yeah, I would be excited
it's
about
gonna
it.
It's going to drive every listener to Twit shows nuts.
Yeah, computer would not be a good trigger word in this context. You probably say that a certain amount.
Yeah. Los Angeles has an Echo skill, speaking of. One of the first major cities with its own skill. The city of Los Angeles Echo skill launched last month with basic information about holiday events around L.A. Next month, it will include information about reading times at local libraries. Hey, Echo, is the local library open for reading? Information about city council members. Hey, Echo. No, I'm not going to go on with that one. And upcoming council sessions. I like that.
Oh, it would be needed. What if you could do, so they're talking about 311 services. It'd be awesome if you could say, hey, Echo, I'd like to report a pothole.
Yes.
And then you could have a conversational interface.
Yes.
Whenever I want to report a pothole or figure something out, it's not a recording thing. It's basically like you have to wait online forever or on the phone forever. That'd be terrible.
But that's
or that'd be awesome.
A phone-like thing, because then you can actually be where the pothole is and have the GPS coordinates, whereas you'd have to say, it's somewhere down the street on the corner of this other street.
Well, Waze is very good at that kind of thing. You know, if you're a serious Wazer.
Yeah, you know what drives me nuts, though, Leo?
What?
Is that 5 miles, you know, it's in the middle of winter in New Jersey. So 5 miles from there, there's a pothole. No poop. Of course there is. It's New Jersey in the winter. There's potholes everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Try. Yeah. Can you narrow it down a little?
I've driven on some roads where some bozo with no life has gone through and reported
every
single pothole.
Oh, so
he's told me every damn pothole. Yeah. I know.
Why is it that it was one brief shining moment the Moto X allowed you to have any wake phrase you wanted, and nobody else has done that since then. It can't be that hard if the Moto X did it. Why do we have to be stuck with those three? Can't we just... I mean, there's enough horsepower in that thing that it could record...
Charlie Kindle came on, actually, my podcast, and we talked about that because it's, like, probably the third most common question I get about the Echo.
Did he invent the Kindle?
Sorry. No, he did not. Okay. His name is spelled, quote, the wrong way for Amazon. He's Kindel, E-L. Okay. So he said he tried to get Jeff to change it, but no. He says that it's actually very hard to get it to, you have to train the computer to only hear that word. They're looking for a certain combination of things that don't occur naturally or as naturally. They apparently also looked at like how common a name the A name is.
No, but that's because that if they could let you customize it, they wouldn't have to worry about that because I know what's common in my life. And if I have a kid named A-L-E-X-A, that's a very poor choice. And if I happen to have kids named A-L-E-X-A, Echo, and Amazon, I'd be in deep trouble. I wouldn't have it. But on my Moto X, my trigger was, I swear to God, and it worked great, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. That is not a phrase that came up a lot in my life. And it was a perfect trigger phrase.
And so let me give you, have you heard about the Watson conference call app on GitHub?
No.
So I heard about this today for the first time. So somebody used the API and they wrote an app so that you put it on for your conference call and it listens for your name.
Yeah.
Jeff.
And it wakes you up.
And then what it does, then it sends you a text to say you got, and then what it does is it waits a certain amount of time. Then it comes back in and says, oh, sorry, was on mute. And you have 32 seconds to figure out a response. And it gives you the prior two sentences to your name.
This guy works for Splunk. He lives in Shanghai.
He can recognize your name as a trigger.
Josh Newland. The software is called Say What? It's a Python script that runs when the meeting begins, and the computer microphone listens in the background. And then, OMG. Now, why he admits this, well, he works for Splunk, which is an AI company. That's great.
Isn't that the greatest?
I love that. Thank you, Splunk. What about this? Let's get some conspiracy theories going because, you know, there's a podcast isn't a podcast without a few good conspiracy theories. Amazon has sought permission from the state of Washington to run mystery wireless tests.
Oh, yes. I was going to look and see.
In rural Washington and Seattle, they don't say what the test would be before, but the filing hints a new type of technology or wireless service. The project would involve prototypes designed to support, quote, innovative communications capabilities and functionalities. Maybe the woods will be listening. You'll be able to say, hey, Echo in the woods. The test could involve maybe some kind of communication system to control delivery drones. It is the same. It's the Amazon listed Neil Woodward as the main contact, and he's a retired astronaut who joined Amazon in 2008 and is senior manager for Prime Air, the team in charge of the...
Oh, no, wait. That's so cool. Wait. Bezos hired an astronaut.
An astronaut.
For the Air Service. Too cool.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me the frequencies again, because I'm on the spectrum.
Okay.
I used
proposed
to have this on
frequencies.
My wall.
Lot in the 700 megahertz band and the 800, then 1800 downlink 1900 and 2100.
Oh, that's Sprint. That's mobile phones. Okay, so that's it's for mobile phones, fixed wireless, or broadcast. So,
Boy, you're good. Man, I'm glad we hired this woman. She's just, what an asset you are. You even like just know things like that.
Thank you. That's what the U.S. government says you can do in those bands. Let's look at 1900. You said 1900?
So there's two bands. There's the bass and downlink band. That'll be 1930 to 1990. And then the mobile uplink band, 1920 to 1980.
Okay. Those are, again, fixed and mobile.
Okay.
Sprint owns a lot of that. Yeah. So
that's what
but it's not something like there's some for satellite bands, for example, which then you might be like, oh, look, they're going to use satellite, broadband. So this is.
It is under the FCC's experimental authority, and that's why those frequencies, low power temporary fixed base transmitters and associated mobile units indoors at and near its company facilities in Seattle. Those facilities, by the way, are in the back of a retail mall featuring a Hobby Lobby store and a Walk King restaurant. If you really want to start a conspiracy theory, I think the Hobby Lobby is up to something. No, I'm just kidding. Obviously. This is probably a non-story, but I just like it. I like to imply that Amazon is up to secret, interesting stuff.
You could do some cool stuff with this. This spectrum, especially at the lower end, is actually really good spectrum.
That's the stuff that goes through walls.
It goes through walls. It doesn't feel like I would be like, oh, maybe they're doing something crazy in their warehouses. But this feels like something that could be.
I think it's drone.
It's for that floating drone.
It's drone control.
Warehouse sky. And remember how they had the patent for the warehouse in the sky?
That would make sense if they were testing drone delivery, but why in the woods, I guess. But I mean, it would make sense that you would have to have something that would go from the warehouse to the drone. Anyway, who is it that's is it Grubhub? One of the food delivery services is testing little robots that go around on the street delivering food.
Yeah.
How long before somebody says, oh, there's food in those things?
So my friend Bill Gross was here with me. Did you see? So he said he saw a UPS kind of truck that was shown at I think CES, where the truck drives to a neighborhood, and then in the truck is a whole bunch of drones, and the drones go out from there. And then the truck goes to the next stop in the neighborhood. So it's kind of
Postmates
last
is doing
mile
this.
By drone.
Yeah. Is Bill there? Yeah, yeah. Say hi to Bill. Love Bill.
Yeah, he is here.
Well, we were just talking about X1 the other day with Jordan Rittner. Love Bill. Yep.
Fleet is the greatest. Absolutely greatest.
Fleet of delivery robots roll out in D.C. This is a partnership with the Postmates and Starship Technologies. The food at this point, a Postmates employee walks behind the drone. The drones are like little vans controlled by a remote pilot. They travel on sidewalks to within a 2-mile radius at about 4 miles an hour, which is kind of fast. Can carry up to a 40-pound delivery. You would not want to get hit in the shins by a 4-mile-an-hour robot carrying 40 pounds of stuff.
I imagine it's got sensors that would make it stop.
I hope so.
But you could have so much fun messing with it. You could be like...
Well, you push a button on the back, it opens up, and there's your food. I mean, come on!
Something like this seems really cool. For use somewhere, but this is probably not the right use case.
Not in a city.
I feel like Wired did a story like a year ago about those similar types of drones wandering through hospitals. I think it was dispensing maybe medicine.
No, that's actually being used right now. Yeah. And there's a hotel in San Francisco. There's a couple of hotels that use robots to, like, you forget your toothbrush, you call down, and a robot comes to your door with a toothbrush.
That is awesome.
those environments are, much more constrained. The robot knows how to go up and down the elevator and go down a hall and stuff like that. And then you can get greeted by a robot at the W in San Francisco. But it doesn't move. You saw that at CES. You were talking about that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't talking about that, but I have seen it. Yeah. I was going to say, it's not as cool as the Japanese robot which is the dinosaur wearing the fez. Because that thing is awesome.
Why don't all robots look like dinosaurs wearing fez?
Don't know.
What is the plural of fez? Is it fezes? Fezai? Fezes? Fezzy wigs?
Kevin's like, I'll just tell you, dumb Americans.
Dumb Americans don't know a thing, do you?
Oh, I'm not sure what it is in the original Arabic, but it definitely is fezzes in English.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Samsung says that the problem with the battery in the Note 7 was the battery. So that's very informative. Actually, on the 23rd, they will release their detailed findings. But they are saying now the battery was the main cause of the Note 7 battery fire. You don't blame anybody else. And what's going on with Samsung? Isn't the CEO now wanted? A wanted man?
The heir apparent? I think it's the heir apparent,
oh, it's
not
his son?
The CEO.
Okay.
I think so.
Yeah, the court, I think, blocked it for now.
Okay.
I think, last
wow.
I saw.
J.Y. Lee. And the Samsung court has rejected arrest of the Samsung heir for bribery, perjury, and embezzlement. So he can continue. He's the vice chairman of Samsung Electronics, and they say Bloomberg says the de facto head of Samsung Group. His grandfather founded it. Let us take a break and talk about something that you know very well, Stacy. You use it
food?
All the time. Food, glorious food. Hot cupcakes and mustard. It is the Eero. And I've got three.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, here it is. I got three of them right here in my hands. The Eero is a better Wi-Fi. It's not just a Wi-Fi router. It's a Wi-Fi system that blankets your whole home in fast, reliable Wi-Fi. No buffering, no dead zones. Wi-Fi that works. And it's enterprise-grade Wi-Fi. Now with the next generation of mesh technology, they've updated. One of the things I love about Eero that you can't say about most routers out there is it's getting firmware updates on a regular basis. You don't even have to do anything. They push the firmware updates. I just got 2.1 on my Eero, which adds TrueMesh, which makes it possible for Eero to use the fastest, most reliable path for Wi-Fi automatically. You don't have to do anything. It adapts to network demand, your home's layout. So the way it works, you put the Eero app on your phone. You install the first Eero. It's got two Ethernet ports, one to connect to your cable modem or your DSL modem or the internet. The other one you can use to, and I do, on a 24-port switch. You don't have to have 24 ports, but I have a lot of stuff. You could connect it to a switch for wired connections. It is a really cool device. Then, once you got that up and running, you go to where are you having bad Wi-Fi? You go and you place the second or third Eero where you're having bad Wi-Fi, and the app will help you place it properly. And you're just slowly spreading the Wi-Fi throughout the house. This new TrueMesh makes the system even more expandable, so you can go well beyond three. I have five. Cover the largest homes and most complex layouts, and two times the LAN speed between Eeros now.
You want a pro tip?
Yeah, pro
tip. That makes it even better.
Eero pro tip.
Eero pro tip. They have an Echo skill, and you can actually tell the Echo to turn off the light, the LED light, on certain Eero routers.
It's bedtime. So we have turn off the light.
Bedtime.
Yep.
Yep.
You can also...
Okay.
They also know... This is really interesting. Your phone pairs to a particular Eero or your device, so you can ask Echo, where's my phone? And it'll say, well, it's paired to the dining room Eero. So you can kind of know, oh, good. Well, at least I know it's in that area. And the thing we use all the time with Eero is actually kind of cool. You can reserve IP addresses. You can do port forwarding. But you can also see all the connected devices, wired and unwired, and assign them to a household member. So we went through and assigned our 14-year-old's iPad, iPhone, computer, Xbox. We said, these are all Michael's. And now I can tell Echo, pause Michael's internet. And his... And all of a sudden, he's offline and has to go to bed or come to dinner. And by the way, no, he can't say Echo, unpause Michael's internet. You have to do that in the app, which is password protected. I love Eeros. This is such a great solution, and so much better than the old school Wi-Fi router. If you're suffering with bad Wi-Fi, go to eero.com and get free shipping if you're in a hurry, which you ought to be if you're suffering. Get this, end the suffering faster with free overnight shipping when you use the offer code TWIG. So go to Eero.com, order Eero. You can get one, you can get two, you can get three, you can get more. In fact, I would start with three probably in most homes and then expand beyond that if you have, if you know, you're spread out more. And when you use the offer code TWIG, after ordering, select overnight shipping, use the offer code TWIG, and that'll be zero cost to you. I told you before, I set it up at my mom's house because she has a studio out back where she weaves and does art, and she stopped using it because she couldn't get, her iPad wouldn't work out there. It was too far away. So when I went out there after Christmas, I brought a set of Eeros, put one next to the router, which is in her office, one in the kitchen, and then one in the studio. I actually put another one in the back room. I think I added one more. And man, it's great. She's loving it. I also gave her an Echo out in the studio, so she's super happy now. She can listen to classical music and knit. It's wonderful. Eero.com. Don't forget the offer code TWIG for free overnight shipping. January 23rd, Samsung just announced just moments ago, we will find out, we'll see the full report on what went wrong with the Note 7. They do say something was with the battery. We have a lot of theories. We've talked a lot about this, what it could be. And of course, the Note 7 has been fully recalled. Samsung will probably host a conference call. I doubt they'll do a live event. of course, there will be an apology. And the main thing they've got to do at this point is explain why how they know it's happening and why it's never going to happen again. We shall see. Lots of theories about why it happened. Generally thought that the company tried to put too much battery in too small a case, that the pressure exerted on the battery caused it to leak, and the leaks got plated and eventually short-circuited and caused the fire. And that would make sense, but, you know, only Samsung really knows, so...
Hey, Leo.
Yeah?
Just leaving.
I got my hat on.
Your Davos, I've got to get out of here hat?
Yeah.
All right. Jeff Jarvis from Davos. Been great having you. You led a panel.
I got to catch my bus.
Go catch the bus. Just so I to know, is Bono there this year?
No, Will I Am.
Okay.
And Shakira. Okay.
Shakira's the new Bono.
Yeah.
Hips don't lie. Have a great day. Great night.
Sergey is here, I'm told.
Who is? Sergey?
Sergey for the first time in years.
Oh, nice. So how much longer?
Till Friday night, and then I fly back Saturday.
All right,
and then I go to Tokyo, and I'll call in early next, whatever it is, Thursday morning or whatever,
wow.
From Tokyo.
Oh, my God. You are crazy. Wow. So you're going to be there
really
during the inauguration. Are they going to have a big screen and everybody's going
to
gather around?
I'm glad to be out of the country. And, you know, I went to the mall, and I'm going to take this off. Hold on. It's very hot. I went to the mall, I should have brought it tonight for proper purposes, but it'll piss off your audience. I got a hat made, a black hat that just says resist.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah. What is the general tenor there? I mean, is it concern?
It's a lot of concern, and I would say that you know, I can make Trump jokes in any room here because these are not Trump fans, or they're very quiet about it. So this is the elite versus the populace. The populace ain't here. Somewhere there's a populace, Bravos.
Yeah,
but it ain't here.
No.
One of the great lines. So when Edelman did his trust barometer, they had a panel discussion, and a banker from Deutsche Bank set up there. To the whole assembled room of executives from all over, he said, "You're all bankers now," which is to say, nobody trusts any of us.
It's very interesting because, I mean, it could be very good for, especially for the Davos crowd.
No, because this is a crowd that believes strongly in free trade and globalization.
Oh, yeah, that's probably not.
And this is a crowd that believes strongly in things like NATO and the United Nations.
Oh, yeah, that. Never mind.
And this is a crowd that believes strongly in technology. Okay. No. Mm. Yeah, will they make some more money and be able to hand it off to their kids easier? Yeah, but I think beyond that, no.
Yeah, I'm thrilled about that. My tax rate's going to plummet. So I couldn't be happier.
Oh, you just disappoint. Stacey.
And I got my healthcare locked in, so screw you guys. Anyway, have fun on Friday and for the rest of the week. And we really were glad.
Yeah, thanks. Sorry to leave you early, but I'm going to go and
get the bus.
Thanks.
Get the bus.
Bye.
I can only imagine that Jeff is in the lower tier where the dorms are way out in the outskirts of Davos.
No, there's another. I am in the farthest reach of Davos, but there's another town called Plosters, which is far away. Yeah. I'm very lucky, very grateful not to be there. So, no, it's an easy bus ride for me.
I think Plosters is where all the hot shots stay.
If they have cars that drive them in. Yeah. Some of the people, yes, have cars that they have on call all day.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't.
Those black cars all come in from Clusters. Thank you, Jeff. Have a good night.
All right.
Thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Can you guys hear the dogs barking? Or the dog barking?
Nope.
Nope. Good.
Nope. That mic, that's why we sent you that mic. That mic is amazing rejection of background noise.
Uh-huh.
Ah.
I thought it was...
Mine is more of an Omni mic, which is why you get such a...
Yeah, we're going to... You know what? We should really send Kevin. Except this mic does not do well in the elements.
Yeah,
Kevin, we need to get you a studio. That's what we need.
Yeah, a dog-free studio.
Oh, you know, I put a story on the list. I should have brought it up when Jeff was here, but Kevin is here because this feels like a Jeff and Kevin trifecta kind of story. Ooh. Which is why I put it on there. And for those of you guys who feel like there's not enough Google angle, it involves the Android Play Store. So it's all the way down at the bottom. It's from the New York Times. It's Farhad Manjoo's column about the new censorship thanks to tech, which is rejecting app stores. So China shutting down Apple or forcing Apple to take the New York Times app off of its app stores. And basically...
Not just, not just the New York Times, but Pokemon Go.
Oh, yes. I'm like, oh, the freedom of information. But more people are probably like, I want to play Pokemon Go.
Weird.
The article does go into the idea of how we've stopped with like a decentralized web. And I actually got into a conversation with someone today related to IoT and how we're kind of replicating the thin client brain in the cloud model with IoT. And we really need to move towards a distributed decentralized model for all kinds of reasons, resiliency being one of them. So I was like, oh, that's a good topic for you guys.
Yeah.
I don't know. So Kevin... This is your thing. So I'm very curious, like, how do we make the open web a viable business model and attractive to other people?
Well, I know relevant to this, there's a class action lawsuit just approved to go forward against Apple for restricting apps to the Apple App Store on the Apple platform. Now, the lawyers for the class action lawsuit want to make money. So they're asking for damages because they say Apple is price fixing, which it's clearly not. The App Store, in fact, has had the effect of lowering the value of applications across the board, you know. But I think you could make a better case. Well, not as lucrative, but a better case that the App Store is a form of censorship, right? Apple won't allow politically controversial apps in. Of course, won't allow adult apps in and will not allow competitive apps in many cases to protect their monopoly. So I think... That's another issue with app stores. App stores can be censored easily by governments, but already are censoring these companies are already. Well, less so Google.
Apple is. Google,
yeah. Google doesn't do any of that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's less of that. Yeah. I think
the nice thing on Android is that you don't have to buy it from the App Store.
Yeah.
The bad thing about iOS is you do.
Yes. So which gives Apple veto power over everything and therefore gives governments veto power.
Yes.
But the other half of this is that the number of apps people install is going down. You know, that people are in many ways over apps, and the average number of apps installed per month is under one now. So
now we're doing skills.
Wow, one.
Yeah. So basically, the web is coming back for this, which is good because it means with the sort of advent progressive web apps and the ability to have notifications and persistent stuff and work offline and so on means that you can do a lot of the things that you had to build an app for before with web stuff now. So that is an advantage. That means that you can just use a URL to rather than have to make something for the App Store. And that's not all of those features are there on iOS yet, but they are there on Android and they are there on Firefox and Chrome on desktop as well.
Well, you have the Great Firewall of China, too, which blocks the web stuff.
Yeah.
So China certainly has a better way to block all of this stuff. The App Store gives it a nice, convenient way to prevent, you know.
Yeah, the firewall's a lot harder.
Right.
And difficult. I mean, you can sneak stuff.
Right.
But there's the stuff that Signal does where they do web fronting, where they route messages through other domains. So that to try and block the Signal, you basically end up having to try and block Google as well.
Good. Let's do that. Yeah, you do this at your peril, of course. This is how a first world country can quickly become a third world country by blocking things like Google. Signal's a really good example because, of course, that's the known secure messaging app, widely accepted as a secure messaging app that is used by dissidents. And others to protect their privacy from overarching governments. There was a story that WhatsApp was insecure. We talked a lot about that on Security Now yesterday. I'd refer you to that piece. Bottom line is there's some implementation decisions WhatsApp made that do increase your risk, but they're easily fixed in the settings of WhatsApp. And you should probably use Signal. it just works, right? I love it that Farhad dragged out the 1996 Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace that John Perry Barlow wrote and has since, by the way, somewhat disavowed. And Jeff's been trying to get me to get John Perry Barlow to do a dramatic reading of that for a long time. One of the lines, ours is a world that is both everywhere and nowhere. And as a result, world's governments will never be able to limit or lasso the digital realm. But they're going to try. And then he quotes John Gilmore, cyberpunk John Gilmore from 1993 and founder of Sun. The net interprets censorship as damage and roots around it.
Everyone was so naive.
Oh, those were the days, weren't they? I think that. I think you still can make the case. In fact, I would make strongly the case that, and I made this case 15 years ago in a documentary Kevin Spacey was making about hackers, that hackers are going to be the freedom fighters of the future, that the people who know how to use the internet and route around government intervention are going to be the ones who help us preserve our freedoms. And I think you're seeing all that already with people like Moxie Marlin Spike and Signal.
Right, but this is why.
Go ahead, Kevin.
But also the value that Signal provides is actually usable, unlike PGP and a lot of the previous tools, where it takes about a week's worth to get the damn thing set up, and then you have to redo that every year. Signal basically just works. But in order to do that, they made it dependent on phone numbers, which has other issues, which means you've got to have a phone number, and B, if you change phones, then you have to re-invite everyone and redo that. But that was their way of getting around the public key problem with actually distributed keys.
Right. Sometimes there's a balance between security and convenience, and you give up. The more you have one, the less you have the other, unfortunately. Yes. But sophisticated users will know the difference. The most common passwords of 2016... From Darren,
that's on here?
Yeah. Darren Guccione, who is at Keeper, which is one of the well-known password, very good password vault, Keeper Security. They went through 10 million passwords that became public through data breaches in 2016 and came up with a list. Are you ready? The 25 most common passwords of 2016. They haven't really changed much. Number one, 123456. Number two, 123456789. it's three better. Number three, QWERTY. Number four, 123456789. Number five, 111111. I had a chief engineer who used that as a password, as I remember. In fact, I think at Tech TV that was the default password, was 111111. Number six.
Really, what you should.
1 2 3 4 5 6 7 8 9 0. One, number seven. 1 2 3 4 5 6 7. Number eight. Password.
I feel like that's sinking.
It's going down. People are learning.
It used to be like number one.
It was number one. No, I think 1 2 3 4 5 6 has always been number one. Number nine. 1 2 3 1 2 3. Oh, clever. And number 10. Obfuscated by doing it backwards. 9 8 7 6 5 4 3 2 1. Why is my noob a password? Number 12 on the list.
Snarky hackers.
Number 21, Google. What's your Google password? Google? Wow. Anyway.
Oh, I was trying to figure out the 1Q2W3, and then I'm like, oh
look
I
at your
it.
Keyboard, right?
Yeah. I'm like, so what's 18 ATCSK? What's that?
Oh, that's it. Number 15 is 8. This is a good. This would be a great test, right? For people to like, okay, you have 5 seconds to figure out why number 15. What is 18ATCSKD2W?
ATC
18 8. Doesn't seem like it's related to the keyboard layout, does it?
No, I was typing it in. I'm like, I don't see it.
What is...
But if this is... I mean, apparently this is multiple
people. A lot of people doing it. A lot of people doing it. What does it mean? Come on, chat room.
Help us out.
Stuck right between 666666 and 777777. So it's got to be pretty obvious. What could it be? This is the only one. You're right, Stacey. This is the only one that's not immediately. I feel like once we know, it's going to be. Oh! Got three smart people here.
3RJS. No, some of these are weird. Like, look at 20. That's.
I'm sure they all have some meaning somewhere. Number 20 is 3RJS. 1LA7QE. Is it backwards? Is it anything?
I would be a terrible hacker. I'm looking at here for like, I feel like I'm reading license plates. You know, where you're trying to figure out what are they trying to say.
These are obviously used at on sites where it requires a letter and a number, right? Is shift helpful?
ASCII. No.
No.
Okay. So. Oh.
Wait a minute. Here's
Leo.
A link to the in the
I
chat
hard,
room.
It's a hard-coded password for bots.
Oh, this is
spam bots. Yes. This is a product used by spam bots.
It's spam bots use it, so it's
this
not.
Is what Gizmodo is saying, yeah.
This is Graham Cluley, not aptly named, writing at tripwire.com. The reason is. Bots. People are not choosing those passwords. Same with 3RJS1LA7QE.
Ooh, I spotted the bot passwords. Woo!
You are an anti-bot.
I'm a human.
You're a human. Wow, that's really interesting. It must be hard-coded in some malware or something, right?
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, there we go. We've all learned something here today.
Mystery solved. Thanks, Internet.
You're so smart, Internet. How do people survive without the Internet?
Oh, my gosh. I remember being a reporter in my early days.
Have to go to
like
the library.
First year. Yeah, you had to use like microfiche, and your paper had a thing called the morgue, and you had to go look up stuff. Like
I remember that. I remember. Yeah, you'd go to the microfiche reader, and they'd have like a little spinner, and you'd go going through the. Oh man, those were the days.
And it took you like all day to write one story. Yeah. It was crazy.
Yeah, but it's crazier that, or having to write 50 stories a day because
okay, that's
it's expected
also crazy.
Of you. Because hey, well, it doesn't take any time to research this. HTC has a new series of phone, the U series. No more headphone jacks. We're seeing I called it. Android companies would copy Apple slavishly, even though there's no reason to do so, and eliminate headphone jacks.
Wait, isn't the big
jacks.
Samsung Samsung's going to have the 8. Is it the 8?
Yeah, the 8 won't have headphone jacks.
I thought they said it would.
Because they were the ones who said with the Note 7 announcement, and look, it comes with a headphone jack. But I think the rumor has been that the 8 won't. The courage to include the headphone jack.
I hate them. I hate all of them if they take away my headphone jack.
Me too.
Especially without something. I mean, apparently people really like their AirPods. So I don't have them. I don't know, but
I do like you mean the AirPods, the wireless?
I'm sorry, AirPods.
Yeah, I like the AirPods. I do like the AirPods. But are you an iPhone user?
Me?
Yeah.
No, not usually. I have one. But
it makes no sense to have AirPods unless you have an iPhone. You can pair them to I paired them to my Pixel, but they're no better than any other Bluetooth headset in that case, right?
So if you take
a good microphone with it or not?
Yeah, it's a good microphone, but Apple's doing all this stuff with them that the third parties don't do. Like it's figuring out which microphone to use, for instance. But I've been told when I'm on calls with it, it sounds very good. So. Okay. And it goes down a little bit lower than the ones that are, it at least has a little bit of a thing there.
Is that the technical term?
Yeah, the thing, the drip, the little icicle that comes off your ear.
The wedge.
Well, it's the microphones. That's what it is. It's basically, that's where the microphone is.
Yeah, that's where the microphone lives. And it can do noise canceling. It can do
it too. Is it can position it. Work out where your mouth is and correlate that out.
Exactly what it does. You're so smart.
There's the other security thing that happened this week was Google Key transparency. Did you see that?
No.
Is talking about PGP. It's a keytransparency.org, which I think takes you to the open source thing, and then they take you to the there's a blog post about it.
So what does that mean, key transparency?
So the goal of this is to come up with a way of doing public key mapping so that you can map from your accounts to public keys and check that they do actually belong to you. So it's trying to solve the how do I find somebody's public key thing.
What we've done in the past, of course, is use key servers. MIT runs one. PGP runs one. You're supposed to upload your public key there, and it's searchable by...
Where they've got a mapping and you can verify it.
Okay. So verifying is nice. This is what Keybase.io does, and I really like Keybase.io, but it's a private.
I think I just lost.
Oh, you don't hear me? Hello?
So I think I just had a drop out briefly. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
So I didn't quite hear what you said.
I was just saying Keybase does this.
Yes. So the point of this is it's an open source thing. It's secured by Merkle hashes, so you can call it a blockchain if you really want to. And the idea is it's a verifiable mapping between email address and public key. That's the idea behind it. But so far, it's a bunch of code, and they're still working on integrating it as UI. But they wanted to publish it as code and get a code review on it.
Is the idea that at some point Google will run a server that you can use, that you can log into or upload a key to, or upload your email address to and see what's going on? Is that the idea, or?
The idea is that it shouldn't just be one server. It should be multiple servers. And they can basically, you can attach things to this sort of chain of signed keys to say that, look at this one as well.
I use PGP keys when I download, install open source software to verify that the software is legitimate. Keys are routinely used, or other ways of doing it, but PGP is routinely used in open source for that.
And that's for app stores and things like that, and we use key signing there. But there's effectively when you're using Signal, you're doing that. Signal has a different name for it. They don't call it a key; they call it a magic number or something.
Right. Well, in fact, Open Whisper Systems is one of the teams working on this, as well as teams at Yahoo and Google. Here's what they say in their blog post at Google. Our goal is to evolve key transparency into an open source, generic, scalable, and interoperable directory of public keys with an ecosystem of mutually auditing directories. So this is kind of, I guess, to replace the PGP key server.
Yes. Yeah, that's the idea. And they already have certificate transparency, which is where they keep track of the certificates for every website and put them in a database that's kind of like this.
Right.
So they're trying to extend this from what they do for that, which is a very useful service they provide. And obviously it's easy for them to do because they're crawling the web, so they fetch the certificates all the time. and they're trying to do this to do PKI. So it's interesting, but as I say, it's early days, and I'm not sure it's baked into any usable products yet.
We'll watch with interest. I like what Keybase has done, but it's, of course, a private attempt by some very well-known crypto folk. Keybase.io. I keep a key there. That's actually where I keep my public key. And you can use it to track. I'll track Kevin Mark's public key, and if it changes, I'll be notified, things like that. Those are all. That's what we need, because PGP's key server infrastructure is kind of primitive. We didn't mention it, but Chelsea Manning's sentence will be commuted. President Obama commuted the bulk of her 35-year sentence, which was really kind of disproportionate. People accused of similar or convicted of similar crimes typically would receive 7 or 8 years. She has served 7. It'll be commuted. She'll be released on May 17th. I think mostly hailed by people. There was a petition circulating, which got more than 100,000 signatures, urging the president to do that. So I think most of the tech community thinks this is a good idea. She's attempted to commit suicide twice, has gone on a hunger strike. Seems like a good idea to commute this sentence. There are those who say, she's a traitor and she should serve all 35 years. But I think for humanitarian reasons, her sentence. She's not been pardoned, by the way. She's been sentences commuted, which tells me that it's highly unlikely in the next couple of days Edward Snowden will receive a pardon. He, of course, never turned himself in, was never tried, and never received a sentence. There's no commutation possible. And if Chelsea Manning hasn't been pardoned, it seems unlikely that Edward Snowden would be pardoned. Mark Zuckerberg testified in a suit. Yesterday.
Wait, no. Mark Zuckerberg visited one of the 50 states he wants to visit.
He has now visited one of the 50. Which state was it? Where was the trial?
Texas.
Oh, it's one of them East Texas.
No, it was in Dallas. It was Dallas.
It's
Dallas.
Okay. It's one of those schools.
This is, of course, the Oculus Rift trial. A small company claims that Oculus stole all of its technology from ZeniMax. And Zuckerberg says, I never even heard of ZeniMax before this lawsuit. Okay. What else?
Oh, I'm like, do you want more insights?
I don't think
he appeared to be a good adult. What, if you want some...
Well, he's going to run for president in 3 years.
I was going to say, if you want conspiracy theories...
He's totally running for president. In fact... Mark my words, we are going to see the techno, the techno elite, suddenly gain a great interest in government, and Peter Thiel is going to run for governor of California. I think Jeff Bezos has ambitions. He's moved to Washington, D.C., and not just because of the Washington Post. He's got a big house.
Did he move there?
Well, he just bought the most expensive house in the most prestigious district of Washington, D.C., where the Obamas will be his neighbors and many others. I think you don't buy a house in D.C., a 23-bedroom house in D.C. for fun.
Well, you don't buy, if you're going to run for office, you wouldn't run in D.C., though.
No, but you may end up living there. Who knows? I guess they give you a house, though. Right? They do give you a house.
Yes.
I think Zuckerberg is totally... Look, he's... Did we talk
but
about
is
this
Is he
going to
be
week?
Old enough?
Yes, no, just barely.
Okay.
His birthday is like the month before the filing deadline, like August.
You only have to be 35, right?
35.
Yeah. Okay. I thought you had to be 40, and there is no way.
Constitutionally, he has to be 35. He'll be 35, I think it's August, 2018, something like 2019. So he will make it. He also has now proclaimed that he has some religious feeling. At least he's not an atheist anymore, or I don't know. He's going to visit all 50 states this year, maybe have a town hall. And the most important factoid is that when they restructured Facebook's stocks so that he and Priscilla could give away the bulk of it to the foundation, Among the change in bylaws was a change that said he could continue to run Facebook even if he held government office. Now, why do you do that unless you intend to hold government office?
To be president, you can't run a company.
That's why they're watching with great interest to see if Trump skirts that. No,
he can't skirt that.
No, there is no conflict of interest. He's the president. We'll see. I don't know. Look, I think from a emotional perspective, from an ethical perspective, that's the case. But from a purely legal perspective, it may not be the case, right? He may be exempt. The president's exempt. In any event, clearly Zuck is watching with interest. And I think that this most recent election was a cattle prod to these already massively ambitious people to perhaps seek public office. Not because being president of the United States is in any way better than being chairman and president of Facebook or Amazon, but because they want to change the world, right?
I don't know.
And it looks good on the resume.
I mean, there is the question of like, hey, once you've been president, what do you do next? And once you've been the CEO of a massive company right. that you've grown from scratch,
what do you do next?
What is next? You go to space. That's been the historic route. So
yeah. That's kind of, you know what? It turns out space, not. I really fully believe that we are going to see Silicon Valley in many ways attempt to get involved in politics. I don't know why, but I just feel like that seems. The technocrats are, you know, this is
They're
exactly the mindset.
They're going to hate it, though.
They're going to hate it. But the mindset of a technocrat is, these idiots don't know how to run anything. We're the smartest people in the room. We know how to do it right. Get out of the way and let us just take over. That's their.
And then they're going to encounter. Remember when Zuckerberg donated so much money to the schools? Was it New Jersey?
New Jersey. Wasted money.
Yeah. They're going to run into the real world. They're not well equipped to deal with it because nothing works in the real world, especially in politics that way. And what is it when you meet an immovable force? I feel like there's
an irresistible force meets an immovable object.
Oh, is that what I want to say?
And then you have what they call a Mexican standoff.
It's not going to be good. I would like
you
text
would, so I
people.
Take it you would not vote for Mark Zuckerberg for president.
I don't know. I mean, the man doesn't have a platform yet. I want people to run for office who are tech savvy, but who genuinely care about fixing our problems and also genuinely care about people.
I think Mark cares about fixing our problems. I don't know how he feels about people, though.
I don't think he feels, because you can't look at the problems we have divorced from the people. And that's.
I think Silicon Valley buys into that of late expressed notion that empathy is not useful in politics.
Good luck to them then.
some of them do. I mean, it depends, you know.
It was a New Yorker article that I thought was really interesting. I can't remember. I've referred to it before. Empathy, in fact, can get in the way, right?
It can. And
Paul Bloom, that's who it is. Yale University psychologist Paul Bloom says that empathy is an overrated trait for a leader. It can inspire altruism, but it can also contribute to bias, and it does not necessarily translate to moral decision making. And they did a lot of research to indicate this.
That there is that, and you shouldn't have the type of, like, right now our politics is run very much on knee-jerk reactions to moral outrages.
Right.
So you get highly that's not the way to govern, but you can't, I don't know if you can be an effective a president, especially because it's such.
Bloom talks about the child in the well story.
Yes, yes.
Remember that?
Baby Jessica.
Baby Jessica. Fell in Texas, of course. Where else? She fell into a well, and the whole nation focused on that. And because it's easier for us to care about one person and to help one person than to sympathize with a large group.
But you're not going to get elected if you don't know how to connect with people. I mean, Donald Trump has zero policy efforts, it seems. But he connects with people, certain people, very well.
He's empathetic.
He's not empathetic. He just.
No, he's not.
I don't know. How do you know? People who meet with him report that he's quite a nice guy.
I'm not saying he's mean. He's not empathetic. He doesn't seek to feel other people's pain or.
Do we know that? I don't
understand.
I mean, Bill Clinton always said, "I feel your pain. I feel your pain." He was the king of empathy, right? He'd look you in the eyes. He'd feel your pain, and then he'd go around and screw you. So I don't know. I'm not convinced that. I don't know. I'm cynical. Our show today brought to you by the best audio bookstore in the world, Audible. I'm such a huge fan. As you know, I became an Audible customer 16 years ago now, and I have hundreds of books in my Audible library. That's one of the things I like about Audible is that unlike the my previous books on tape, I get to keep these books, and I can download them and listen to them again at any time. Oh, look. Neil Gaiman has a new book on Norse mythology. Oh, that would be great. Of course, he wrote American Gods, which is kind of based on Norse mythology. This is not out yet. It won't be out till February. But so you can get this is what I like about Audible is that they get all the bestsellers when they come out at a day and date as the hardcover. So you can listen to anything.
Have they got Charlie Stress?
Yeah, they got a ton of Charlie. So what do you like about his stuff?
He writes it's good science fiction stuff, but he is a techie, so he writes the tech right. He does a lot of interesting, he's got multiple different parallel series. But the Empire Games is the new one in the Merchant series.
So they have up to book 6, The Trade of Queens, so I guess book 7 is due.
Yeah, well, he just reissued them as 3 large books rather than 6 small books, the previous series. And then this is the first, the second trilogy, which is, so it's twice as long as those. And it's
It's a sixology.
Yes.
Well, look, here's the thing. No matter what you're into, especially science fiction. When I first joined Audible in 2000, they didn't have a lot of science fiction, but they really made a concerted effort to beef up the sci-fi. In fact, they created an Audible Frontiers imprint that re-records some of the classics from Heinlein and Asimov. So really, this is a great place. Oh, Carrie Fisher's diary, narrated by Fisher. Yeah, The Princess Diarist, and Billy Lord is available in Audible. I would love to listen to that. I've heard her make the rounds, heard many interviews with her.
Cut to 2013.
About this.
Much the same kinds of things were happening, only faster and more intensely.
This of course, is the diary that she kept while she was in making the original Star Wars movie in 1977, and reveals, well, I don't want to, no spoilers, but reveals this kind of shocking secret.
Okay, it was so not shocking. Come on now.
You
Come
knew? On, really? You could tell?
Oh, okay. Who wouldn't?
I didn't know. I was shocked. I didn't know. Michael Lewis is newest. I read every, if you haven't read a Michael Lewis book, he wrote The Big Short. He wrote Moneyball. He is one of our best, most insightful writers of nonfiction. His latest, The Undoing Project, is about Daniel Kahneman and Amos Tversky and their articles and studies on how humans make decisions. Actually, Kahneman's book is one of my favorites on Audible. Let me see if I can find that. That's another one I would recommend. Daniel Kahneman wrote Thinking Fast and Slow. Mm. And it's about how we were just talking about the elephant and the guy riding the elephant and all of that stuff. He says we have 2 systems that drive the way we think. System 1 is fast, it's intuitive, it's emotional. System 2 is slower, more deliberate, more logical. And he's really done the studies on how we think. I'll tell you what, Audible is such a great resource. Let me get you a book free. How about that? Here's the new one, an Audible original, Ponzi Supernova, Bernie Madoff on the world's largest con. This is called, interesting. I didn't know this is something maybe Audible's doing now. a little different. They're doing originals. Hmm. So here's the deal. Go to audible.com/twig. That'll bring you to the gold sign up. That's the book a month account, which you also get the daily digest of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. You pick any book, you get a credit toward a book, keep the book no matter what happens. But if you're not happy, you can cancel anytime in the first 30 days and pay zip. But I don't think you'll cancel. It's been, for me, one of the great pleasures of my life. I listen all the time at work. If I had a commute, I would listen. That's how I started. I listen when I'm on the treadmill, when I'm washing dishes. Audible.com/twig for your first book free. And we thank Audible for their support. Here's another Audible original. They must be doing a bunch more Genius Dialogues. Oh, with MacArthur Fellows. Wow. Amy Smith of MIT's D-Lab. Oh, this sounds great. They're doing a bunch of original stuff now. This is new. Hmm. All right, moving on. Google says its verified apps feature, you know, where it scans those apps as identified, get this, 25,000 potentially dangerous apps and kept them out of the Play Store. Wow.
Thanks, Google.
Thanks, Google. Thank you, Google. And that's actually on your Android device. Make sure it's turned on. Google will warn you. And here, I love this. This is Google for you. This is the formula. the Z-score. So that way you can have a Python script do this. N is the number of devices that downloaded the app. X is the number of retained devices that downloaded the app. And P is the probability of device downloading any app that will be retained. And there you go. If an app has an extremely poor Z-score, Google immediately classifies it as a PHA and then will kill installs. So there. What is a PHA? I don't know, but I'm sure it's a bad thing.
Potentially harmful app.
Potentially harmful app.
Seriously, they did that?
Of course they did.
Oh, gosh.
Data-driven, baby. It's data-driven.
Maybe they will work out. The technocrats will work out in government.
That's the point, is that the mindset that says, well, it's all can be solved with a formula is exactly the mindset that says, get out of the way. Let us take over. We know how to do these. We know how to do the math.
I totally understand. For a while, I used to be that way. But now I feel.
You've become empathetic.
I dealt with the real world.
Yeah.
Yes. No, and the thing is, you know, we do, the scientific method is a powerful thing. And
I love the science. You will never convince me the scientific method is not the most important thing humans have come up with ever.
Right. So there is that, but it does rely on you actually modeling what you think you're modeling.
Yeah.
If you
there's confirmation. There's a lot of human failings, like confirmation bias and so forth.
Yeah, and there's also a lot of, you know, there's like entire fields of scientific papers that are now being questioned because they basically spent too long gaming the statistics rather than actually doing productive, reproducible experiments. So the challenge is you've got to use the scientific method, but you've also got to, you know, make sure that you haven't got models with gaps in it, which is the weapons.
And the tech industry has incredible gaps.
Yes.
Incredible.
Oh, and has a blind spot as to where its gaps are.
Yes.
Yes. I was going to point you to, let me see if I can find the link. There was this great article and it was about the 69th African-American woman to graduate with a PhD in physics in the United States ever. I think it was Gizmodo interviewed her about Hidden Figures, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And the story, which I'm desperately searching for the link because it was a great interview. Did you find it?
From HuffPo.
Was it HuffPo?
A year ago. Dr. No. Chanda Prescott Weinstein, the 63rd black woman in American history with a physics PhD. That's kind of hard to believe that in all this time there have only been 63. But remember, women weren't allowed to go to school, to college, 100 years ago. So, you know.
Well, yes. So this is, I think it's a more recent article because it's tied to the release of the movie. I wish I could find it.
I'll find it. I have the means. What you do, so let me show you a little tip here. You go to tools in your Google search and you say, let's find the results to this search from the last month or week. Which should we do? Month? Look at that. Karsten already did it.
There. Oh, Karsten.
This is from Gizmodo, Australia. A black female astrophysicist explains why Hidden Figures isn't just about history.
That sounds like a very good article.
Read that article. It made me cry because I have been in places where I am one of the only women in the room.
Yep.
I can't imagine being one of only women and black, being a black woman.
Can you imagine?
And the things people said to her that wasn't even like a jerky, it may not have even been meant as a jerk thing, like the assumption that she couldn't handle the coursework. Actually, I think that is kind of a jerky thing, but I know at the time that people...
Well, let's not forget Larry Summers.
Yeah.
Who was president of Harvard when he said, well, women just can't do physics. A couple of years ago.
I mean, my mom was a geophysicist because she was convinced she couldn't be a physicist. And she was one of seven women in her program at like Rensselaer Polytech back in the 70s. And...
Good for her. I like it that your mom. See, I didn't realize you came from.
They are so disappointed that I'm a writer. They're like, my dad's a double E, my mom's a geophysicist.
Oh, that's where all this brains come from. No. I get it. Larry Summers implied there was an innate difference between men and women that made women bad at science. You jerk. By the way, he then went on to a prominent role in, who was it? It was it with, I think it was with the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm. Anyway.
He got sanitized.
So read that article because it's a great example of how tech and science has these gaps and putting them in charge.
You want to get really depressed. I just finished the chapter in The People's History of the United States by Howard Zinn. On women's role in American history is so depressing. It's like, oh my God, you know? And I, on behalf of men everywhere, I apologize. And it's like, well, we can do better. Let's do better. Why don't we do better? And while we're doing better, let's get your pick of the week. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the time of the show towards the end here where we get to do the picks of the week. Normally, Jeff would do a number, but he's gone. He's gone, so I'll search for a number while Stacy does her thing. I like your thing. Yes.
My thing is a thing because... Oh, did I freeze?
Nope. Me might have frozen, but you're still moving.
I was like, my Skype just went someplace else.
It knew exciting. You were going to do this thing.
All right, so my app of the week is Stringify. And this is a way to connect. It's like if this, then that, but instead of just doing one and statement, you can do many.
Oh, and I've been wanting this.
Yes. So the iOS app is much better. I've got to tell you this right now. The Android app is out in beta. It just came out like a week and a half ago, maybe 2 weeks ago. And so if you have the option, iOS is the way to go. So what you do is you manually add all your devices. They support an astonishing number of things. So Hue Lights, Arlo Cameras, NetAtmo, Nest, The Wink, TechCrunch.
New York Times.
Notifications.
Automatic.
New York Times.
Our sponsor.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
So lots of physical and digital things. Yay. The Echo. I should put that in there because people love talking to that.
Yes, got to support the Echo.
It lets you build these flows in your best bet, actually, if you can.
By the way, it even supports if this, then that.
Yes, it also supports if this and that, which is really cool.
You could daisy chain these things.
That's exactly what you're going to do. So if you go to the site, it'll show you a flow. I don't want to show you my flows because they're kind of messy. It's hard to, I will say it is tough to navigate the first time around.
This is programming at this point.
It is. So click on a flow, pick one that you like, 30-minute timer. That
That's the most popular current popular flow.
So you see what you do. You
Here's a better one, a Party Time Light Cascade.
Oh, do that one.
Yeah, because this requires Insteon and Hue lights and Alexa, I mean Echo. So what you do is you ask Amazon Echo to tell Stringify it's party time. It turns on your Insteon keyboard, starts your timer for 7 seconds, then turns on Hue Bulb A19 to purple.
Yes.
That's something you can't do with If This Then That.
Right. And some of them are even better. Like you can have multiple triggers. So if this is happening and this is happening.
Here's an example. Like, your Pivot Power Genius.
There you go.
When the Nest Cam detects motion and when you're away, it sends an email. Then it turns on your Wink Pivot Power Genius and sends you an email. So you've got and statements in here. Then sets a timer for 10 minutes. Then turns off your Pivot Power Pivot Genius. Huh. So
what's the Pivot Power Genius do?
It's just a power strip.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a smart power strip.
Yeah.
So yeah, you can see how this could be a really powerful tool.
Yeah.
It is tough. Like, my recommendation, if you download this, it's not tough. I shouldn't say that. Watch the video as to how to do it, because otherwise, if you should like start playing around, you're kind of like.
If you know Boolean logic, you should be able to figure this out, though, right?
The logic isn't. It's how they have things wrapped on their on their canvas. It's purely a mechanical thing. It's not a logical thing.
Okay. I like it that you could do Boolean logic. So there's one that it will turn on your spotlights when your Nest Cam detects motion, but only if it's night.
Yeah.
Nice. Stuff like that.
So have fun, you guys.
Stringify. Is it free?
It is free. They pay for this based on, hold on. Enterprises pay for this.
Oh, okay. Somebody's got to pay for it.
Someone's paying for it.
I thought they might get referral fees for you buying new gadgets as well.
Yeah, they should. They should.
I did ask them about that, but no.
Nice. Very good find. Thank you, Stacey.
Hello.
Kevin, you've got a few things you want to give a plug to.
So, like, these are my IndieWeb things. So the usual thing is, if you go to IndieWeb.org, we've got our regular homebrew website club next week in multiple cities, San Francisco, London, Brighton, some others. Birmingham as well, I think. The other IndieWeb thing is that WebMention is now a W3C recommendation.
I saw that. Congratulations. That's huge.
It's actually been finalized, and we've been working through this for a while now, and it's been fully published. So
nice.
At this point, go out and implement this. It's official, and it's stable now. So so WebMention, we discussed before, but it's basically a very simple protocol that when one website links to another, it can send a WebMention to say they've done that, and then you can... Then the receiving site can interpret that as a different thing depending on what kind of thing it's been done. My cat is desperate to get into the
kitchen. I was like, oh. cats were harmed in the making of this twit.
Yeah, since the dogs are in the house, obviously the cat is inside. Has been the garden. So you can use it to do likes and reposts and RSVPs and threaded conversations and other things like that. So that's out there, and implementations are growing all the time. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was micro.blog, which is planning to be a new microblogging tool and reader.
Oh, good. We need one of those.
And
this is Manton Rees is doing this.
Yes, Manton Rees is doing this. And there's a Kickstarter
Carson,
for
show
it.
My screen. There you go.
Yes.
So what's it going to look like? Do you host it?
He's going to host stuff himself or let you redirect your domain to it. But yeah, just see what he says about it.
Yeah. Oh, we'll turn on his voice. I turned off his voice. Go ahead, Manton.
Indie microblog. And I'm building a new social network for independent microblogs. It's called micro.blog.
They'll be federated,
open,
I presume.
It's an ad-free blogging platform for short-form content.
I like it. This is what we need. So, how is this different from, say, GNU Social?
He's trying to make it so that it will integrate things. So in some ways, it's more like FriendFeed was, where it will bring stuff in from outside as well. So it's a feeder, and then you can reply there. He said he was going to adopt the WebMention and MicroPub stuff so that it can plug into the
Indie Web. Manton's big into Indie Web, right? So he expects to be fully Indie Web compliant.
So that looks promising. And you know,
he's raised $45,000. His goal was 10, and there's still 2 weeks. So everybody go to Kickstarter and search for what should you search for? Micro.blog, probably.
Yeah, or go to micro.blog, and there's a link there.
Nice.
That's a domain. He bought the domain, obviously, from...
And he's in Austin, so if you want to go over and say hi, Stacey.
Oh, what's up?
What's up?
I'm like an indie media publication, although I'm not on actual indie web platforms.
I'm going to give him some money.
You can make your platforms you're on indie, more indie.
We've seen so many attempts to do an open, federated replacement for these siloed solutions like Twitter, and they never... succeed. In fact,
app.net shut down this week. Yeah.
Pulled the plug. Yeah. What is it going to take to make one of these work?
Well, the thing is that my sense of it is they have to go with the web. They have to be part of the web and behave in that way. And a lot of them, they said, okay, we're going to make our own, you know, our own Twitter, and it'll be our own special thing. You know, that was the problem with Diaspora. It's the problem with app.net to some extent, in that they're trying to replicate the whole thing in one place. Whereas what we've been trying to do with IndieWeb is build it as a set of protocols so that you can wire lots of pieces together and have it still work.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm encouraged by Microblog, because he's taking that idea on board. And I'm hoping, you know, what we're trying to do with IndieWeb is encourage other places to adopt that too. So working with GNU Social and other implementations like that to implement this stuff as well, so that you're able to not... The problem is there's a lot of monoculture. There's only one piece of software that you all have to be running.
Right.
And if you're all running that, then it federates. And if you're not, it doesn't. And we're trying to make it more like protocols so that you can, doesn't matter what software you're running. If you've got a simple protocol like we've mentioned, you can implement that and wire different things together.
Someday everyone will have a web server in their house.
You already have lots of web servers in your house.
Yes.
Yes, that's the problem.
Oh, yeah, we didn't, for example, talk about the new Raspberry Pi that's out that is super powered.
Yeah, we'll talk about
that. That could have been someone's pick.
Yeah. Mine is a very happy pick, because I think we all need some cheering up. I found three interesting websites this week. I'm going to open an incognito tab because I don't want it to be polluted by my... choices. It's the nicest place on the inter.net. And what it does, it just picks a few seconds from a bunch of YouTube videos that have zero views. And you just, it's kind of like chat roulette with nice, wait a minute, this is the hug, I'm sorry, this is a different one. This is the hug one. So what you do is you give a hug. I'm sorry. I have another one that's what I was just saying. And so they invite you to record a video and you give it a hug. And then your hug will be on the internet and you will get a hug if you want to go to the nicest place on the inter.net. So that's nice. But that's actually not the one I wanted to. And it looks like the one that I wanted... astronaut.io has gone down, and I'm going to be sad about that. This is the I'll create a new incognito tab and try once more. Astronaut.io. STRONAUT.io. The idea was this is the one where the guy wrote a script to find unviewed videos on YouTube and just fire them up a few seconds at a time. Is it gone? Oh, crap. I guess it's gone. It was really cool. It was like chat roulette, only like fun stuff. What does it say, Carson? Can you make that bigger? I can't read little print. And you got to the site. I can't get to the site. Today you are an astronaut. You are floating in inner space 100 miles above the surface of the Earth. You peer through your window, and this is what you see. You are people watching. These are fleeting moments. So go ahead. Press go. You can't. The site is, I don't know if the site is down or if it's DDoSed. I saw it on Hacker News. It's probably down.
Yes. It's not loading for me.
Yeah, me neither. Well,
you probably just made it worse by posting.
I didn't help. I did not help. It was actually really interesting because you'd see very strange, disjointed, unrelated clips, But it was like it really was like you were seeing the universe of people in all their varied forms, and there are clips from all over the world. And it's YouTube, so there was nothing, you know, mostly not inappropriate. I didn't see anything inappropriate. Anyway, guess you can't see it now. Keep it around. Astronaut.net, right? What was it?
Astronaut.io.
It was, I'm coming up with more of these, like the Planet Radio things, where more of these, like, interesting uses of the web. They're back. Kids, we're done for the day. I want to thank you so much for joining us, Kevin Marks from the Indie Web, Indie Web Camp, everybody, or kevinmarks.com. Always a pleasure.
Hello, Kitty.
And your kitties. What's your kitty's name?
This is Kelly.
Kelly is really quite a piebald. She's got a little bit of everything in there.
She's a calico, yes, she's got
calico. Is that what you call it?
No. And, I think piebald's horses.
Oh, is it really?
I think so.
Keeps moving my camera. Stop that.
You can't have a piebald cat?
I don't know. This is a good question.
That is a really weird word. No, you can have piebald anything.
Oh.
A piebald or pied animal is one that has a pattern of pigmented spots on an unpigmented white background of hair, feathers, or scales. So you can apparently have a piebald snake. I mean, I think that cat qualifies as piebald. The spots are pigmented in shades of black and or yellow as determined by the genotype controlling the color of the animal. Same as calico? I don't know. Stacy Higginbotham covers IoT as an independent and highly talented journalist. Stacy on IoT.com and IoTpodcast.com, the podcast she does with Kevin Toefel.
Oh, I should have said something. I actually put... So now Stacy on IoT is not just a sign-up page for the newsletter. There's actual content there.
But do sign up for the newsletter.
Oh, yes. Please do that, too. But I'm going to get in trouble. I'm not going to say anything more.
What? Why would you get in trouble?
The people who manage me. My boss will tell me, you must make people sign up for the newsletter, Stacy.
You have a boss?
I have a partner, a business partner.
Oh.
He sells my ads.
Oh.
He does all the gory work, like contracts and advertising.
Whatever you do, if you go to Stacy on IoT, and it is just a dynamite site, don't read the articles. Just sign up for the newsletter. Just sign up for the newsletter. We want to keep Stacy afloat. She does such a great job. Also, follow her on Twitter. She's at GigaStacy. And the podcast is there as well. Up to 94 episodes now.
Yep, 95 comes out tomorrow.
That's Woo-hoo! The real deal. When you get to 100.
Well, we lost like 2 years worth because we were at like 115 or something when Kevin and I did it at GigaOhm. But all of those have disappeared.
Oh, I didn't know that. So this is a continuation of a GigaOhm podcast.
Except it has a totally different name because...
I won't tell anybody, but what was the name of the GigaOhm podcast?
The GigaOhm Internet of Things podcast.
Oh, okay. And you didn't have copies of the shows?
They uploaded everything onto SoundCloud because I didn't actually... We recorded them and then sent them to our producer guy. They uploaded it on SoundCloud and then...
Deleted them.
Poof. They stopped paying their SoundCloud bill. And
I suppose they have the rights to it, so you probably couldn't just put them somewhere.
Yeah, I couldn't. It's okay. I am okay with the web being ephemeral.
I'm not.
I'm not a hoarder. I know.
I don't even count on it being ephemeral. I wish it were in some cases.
Well, yeah.
Huh?
My other tip is Internet Archive will host your audio for free.
Yes.
If you CC it.
Archive.org. And we did that in the early days. That was one of our distribution methods.
Yes.
The archive is awesome. Brewster Kahle and his team of jolly pirates.
They actually hosted all of the GigaOhm old archives because when it shut down, we had no idea what was going to happen, and they needed a rush job.
Yep.
Right.
They have 2,457 old-time radio shows. They have a library of sound, folksonomy. They have games. They have 10,000 Grateful Dead tracks. They have, I mean, it's just a wonderful, wonderful collection of, and this is thanks to Brewster, the Internet Archive make sure that things that would otherwise disappear don't. There's lots of game ROMs up there. Oh, and one of my favorites, the Prelinger Archives, this archive of old film footage. Amazing. He collected newsreels, found footage, all sorts of stuff. Just really a great resource. General Motors presents...
Oh, I wonder if this is where Alamo Drafthouse gets all of its
stuff. Bet ya. A Doctor in Industry. The story of Kenneth W. Randall, M.D. The times were slower. They take a long time to turn the page on this. In a tribute to the members of our medical staff from the men and women in General Motors. Oh, wow. This is, I think, William Post Jr.'s greatest work, worthy of an Academy Award. Ladies and gentlemen, keep the music going. I love the music. Ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for joining us on This Week in Google and wish you a happy week. We'll be back Wednesdays at 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 on most of these same podcast stations. Goodbye and have a pleasant tomorrow. I think we found our new theme music.
Very nice.